Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. So today, I really want to talk about a couple things that that have been front and center in my life and all of our lives for the past few years, and that's COVID, and the fact that now that after years of everyone saying that we were wrong to question anything about this quote-unquote science, now all of a sudden they're asking for amnesty. And with that, I do have Lily with us. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for joining. And, oh, gosh, everybody's got their hands up. Okay. And then Elizabeth is with us.
Hello.
Hello. Yay. And Mom set her hand up right away, too. This is something I guess everybody wants to talk about. So, hi, Mom.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. So let me just open up the show a little bit about amnesty and about how the fact that after years of taking away our, civil liberties and sovereignty, now all of a sudden they're finally admitting that everything that we've been saying has been true all along. And they're asking for amnesty, which means, of course, we all know that amnesty means that you're guilty of something, you did something, and now all of a sudden you want it, you want forgiveness, basically, for so many people that were wronged. And I know that everybody here on this show has been wronged by this system, this COVID machine, in one way or another. And, you know, I'd like you all to talk about your personal stories. I've also opened it up to the the public to call in and out and tell us the most egregious thing that's happened to them during this cuckoo virus nonsense. So since Lily was first, I would like to open it up to her first. And why don't you tell us the worst thing that happened to you personally or your family personally during this nonsense?
Well, I lost the majority of my family that won't speak to me anymore because they thought that I was a terrible person for not wanting to go along with masking and vaccines. I was a CNA for 12 and a half years, and my license has been taken, so I cannot ever work with elderly people in the capacity that I had before, but I got to watch as they genocided a large population of our elders in nursing homes, isolating them and, you know, like forced vaccinating them against their will and things. So to me, I think that that's the most egregious, and I think people forget about it a lot just because, you know, like we don't see our elders in nursing homes as frequently, and so it's easy to forget that they're there. So I try to remind people that that happened, you know, like because that was a real thing. And when they talk about amnesty, they don't want accountability, right? Like they just want everybody to pretend like it never happened. But I think that there needs to be justice for a lot of people, especially our elders that are not here anymore, right? Like they murdered them, factually murdered them. And so anyway, I just like to remind people that that happened.
That's a great one.
Yeah, like, and it was a lot of I mean, I look at it as a blessing, you know, like now, but it was really hard. Like my children have not been able to return to school, which means that they have not very many friends, you know, in that regard, which sucks for them. And, you know, it just kind of was a big upheaval of our entire lives. And so, like, while that's a blessing now, I think that the majority of people I talked with, including myself, like we went through a lot of kind of like PTSD of what was happening. I was physically attacked multiple times, you know, like just trying to go to the grocery store or buy gas or whatever, you know, including by the police because I wasn't wearing a mask. And I have asthma, you know, so, like, they shouldn't have been forcing masks on anybody, but specifically, like, people with respiratory disease, you know? So that was the thing.
Right. I remember a
live
stream back in the day talking about this, saying that, you know, it don't use me as your excuse. You know, there's people out there who have asthma. They can do it. You know, and they need you to do it. I remember you doing a live stream about this, saying, no, don't blame this on me. I'm not for this at all.
Right. Well, because, you know, initially before they were saying, well, look, these people have asthma and can do all the things, they were first, you know, like talking about people with asthma as though we are like really fragile and we were all going to be dead, you know, and like wear your mask for those people. And then, and so that's when I made the live feed, you know, because I was like, do shit for me. Like, that's my own responsibility to take care of my own health. But then aside from that, you know, like after it wasn't going the way that they wanted it to, and, you know, like there were asthmatics and people with autoimmune disorders and things that were not on their side, then they flipped it, you know, to, well, these people that have these things can do this, and so you need to. You know, but like my children had witnessed me be physically attacked by people that worked at the grocery store, people, you know, a police officer at the gas station. And, you know, everyone who knows me, I think, knows that I'm not like physically aggressive or really like even verbally aggressive with people. You know, so that was like pretty ridiculous because I didn't do something to like instigate that to occur. You know, and it caused a lot of PTSD where my oldest daughter was kind of like afraid to leave the house and didn't want to go anywhere and be around people, you know, and so like, and then we went through a lot of like depression, you know, because forced isolation. I had almost finished my master's degree and I now am not going to be able to because I missed the deadline for my internship, and it was because the state of Nebraska, all of the medical and mental health services are very controlled by Boys Town, and Boys Town still requires that you have a vaccine to work within any of their program criteria. You know, so a lot of us are still being impacted right now by the situation while these freaks are asking for amnesty when they caused the problem and have not remedied it, you know? So I find that to be quite ridiculous.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, yeah, it's been a nightmare for all of us, but, you know, I just, as they're asked, they're not asking for forgiveness, they're asking for amnesty. I just want everybody to remember what they did to us. So, Elizabeth, do you want to share the most egregious thing that happened to you during this?
I got addicted to Facebook during the lockdown. I don't know if I have the energy for this kind of a program because we all, I mean, we could just go into, they fucking did the most horrific things to us. They killed our family members. You know, it's just the realm of, do you want to rehash what they did? I think you should probably go into the land of, why did we allow that to happen? Why did I not go to the nursing home and demand to be let in to see my mother and take her home? Why did I allow her to be killed? You know, thousands of people had that same, God, what was wrong with us? Why did we let this happen? The whole getting whipped up and how dare they ask us to forgive them. Who asked you to forgive them? As far as I know, it's only an article in The Atlantic, which is doesn't hold any waters to anyone anymore. I haven't heard one politician, one mayor, one anybody ask for amnesty, let alone lay off the gas of it's safe and effective and your children should have it so they can go to school in the fall. I haven't heard anybody talk about this as being, you know, hands off, let's all do a kumbaya dance and prayer. So this is just, to me, another Facebook thing because I haven't heard it in real life. I'm still fighting the hordes of people that are going to go get boosters and flu shots together, and then come pile on my bus and say, oh, my gosh, I shouldn't have gotten both of them. My arm hurts. And I'm like, my walking bioweapon over here. And not only that, but you think this is a good thing. Nothing has changed. They're getting us farther divided. And I don't know. I think we have to acknowledge that we have a level of accountability as to what happened because we allowed it to happen. It shouldn't be the, oh, no, fuck you, you give up. We also let it, you know, this is a terrible, we watched our neighbors turn into the Nazis. We turned them into the good Germans that just went along. We all went along. All of us. Did any of us say, oh, I refuse to participate in society? We all kind of like participated in this fraud. And now we're like, you know, no one can ride the horse of I'm better than you. We all have a level of accountability. And I don't know if I can go into the land of having to listen to how they hurt us, because they hurt us so badly. And some of these, you know, 5 or 6 people in my family died. So many people's family members that I know have died. And now their whole lives are changed because no one's actually had this come onto the public forum that, oh, can we all just get along? No, they're still pushing. This is being justified, and it's something we continually have to march towards the gas chambers of big pharma and the vaccines. So as far as that's my view on it. I don't know. This is a unfriend be if kind of thing. This is kind of like what it is, because I haven't seen anything of it real other than tickets.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, Mom.
Not even a news.
Okay.
Yes, I have plenty to say. And Elizabeth, yeah. The host of this show, Danielle St. John Ravitch, was persistent in standing up and saying, no, I won't do that. She used to walk in stores and tell the freaking little managers would call the police on her. I forget what you called it. It was guerrilla shopping or something like that. So, and let me just tell you, I bet you every single
I just call
one,
it shopping.
Even you called it shopping? Okay, well, it felt like guerrilla shopping when you described it to me. It was cute. It was adorable. I loved it. My grandkids would go out smugging and smirking and go into stores without masks and get chased out following their mother's example. States like ours, California, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, New York, Virginia, had some of the strictest COVID policies in the nation, whatever those are. And people suffered. I've got a video of a little old lady in a nursing home. And it's obvious that she has Alzheimer's or dementia, and she can't understand why her family aren't coming in. They're standing at the window, and she's got this sad little frantic little look on her face, and she's waving at them, come in, waving them in, and putting her hand up on the window, touching their hand through the glass. It is the saddest thing I've ever seen. And you know what, Elizabeth? You're right. Why did we let them do it? Why didn't we rise up? Why didn't we say no? That's the best question there is. You're right. Danielle didn't. I didn't. But, I mean, as a nation, a freedom-loving...
The masses.
Constitution-having patriots allowed them to trample us in a really kind of frightening way that we put the example you used about walking us to the gas chambers. That's what the Jews did. They walked into the gas chambers. It was, I think, probably the most startling thing I've ever seen as an American citizen.
just absolutely mind-bending, baffling, how we allowed them to get away with this and are still doing it to a certain degree.
Yeah.
That's where I would start. Amazing.
Is there any way, okay, so I'm going to do a fairly long Jimmy Dore covering the Atlantic article that asked, you know, that talks about amnesty. But do you think it's a good idea, Mom,
I have it up.
And crew, to just go through and read it uninterrupted,
no editorializing.
Exactly. Yeah. No narrative alongside with it, because I'm sure we all have a lot to say. But should we just do that real quick, just run through the article, the Atlantic article?
Yes, I think it's a good idea. Yes.
Okay,
so,
Mom, since you got it up, would you mind doing the honors?
I'll read it.
I've seen hundreds of TikToks. I have not seen the article itself.
Get ready for your cardio, Elizabeth.
Cardiovascular exercise will ensue. How is my audio right now?
Loud and clear.
Good. The Atlantic. This was written by a professor, Emily Oster. The title is Let's Declare a Pandemic Amnesty. Subtitle, Let's Focus on the Future and Fix the Problems We Still Need to Solve. Dated October 31st, 2022. April 2020, with nothing else to do, my family took an enormous number of hikes. We all wore cloth masks that I had made myself. We had a family hand signal, which the person in the front would use if someone was approaching on the trail and we needed to put on our masks. Once, when another child got too close to my then 4-year-old son on a bridge, he yelled at her, "Social distancing!" These precautions were totally misguided. In April 2020, no one got the coronavirus from passing someone else hiking. Outdoor transmission was vanishingly rare. Our cloth masks made out of old bandanas wouldn't have done anything anyway, but the thing is, we didn't know. I've been reflecting on this lack of knowledge thanks to a class I'm co-teaching at Brown University on COVID. We spent several lectures reliving the first year of the pandemic, discussing the many important choices we had to make under conditions of tremendous uncertainty. Some of these choices turned out better than others. To take an example close to my own work, there's an emerging, if not universal, consensus that schools in the U.S. were closed for too long. The health risks of in-school spread were relatively low, whereas the cost to students' well-being and educational progress was high. The latest figures on learning loss are alarming. But in spring and summer 2020, we only had glimmers of information. Reasonable people, people who cared about their children and teachers, advocated on both sides. I'm growling. Another example, when the vaccines came out, we lacked definitive data on the relative efficacies of the Johnson & Johnson shot versus the mRNA options from Pfizer and Moderna. The mRNA vaccines have won out. But at the time, many people in public health were either neutral or expressed a J&J preference. This misstep wasn't nefarious. It was the result of uncertainty. Obviously, some people intended to mislead and made wildly irresponsible claims. Remember when the public health community had to spend a lot of time and resources urging Americans not to inject themselves with bleach? That was bad. Misinformation was and remains a huge problem. But most errors were made by people who are working in earnest for the good of society. Given the amount of uncertainty, almost every position was taken on every topic. And on every topic, someone was eventually proved right and someone else was proved wrong. In some instances, the right people were right for the wrong reasons. In other instances, they had a prescient understanding of the available information. The people who got it right for whatever reason may want to gloat. Those who got it wrong for whatever reason may feel defensive and retrench into a position that doesn't accord with the facts. All of this gloating and defensiveness continues to gobble up a lot of social energy and drive the culture wars, especially on the internet. These discussions are heated, unpleasant, and ultimately unproductive. In the face of much uncertainty, so much uncertainty, getting something right had a hefty element of luck. And similarly, getting something wrong wasn't a moral failing. Treating pandemic choices as a scorecard in which some people racked up more points than others is preventing us from moving forward. We have to put these fights aside and declare a pandemic amnesty. We can leave out the willful purveyors of actual misinformation while forgiving the hard calls that people had no choice but to make with imperfect knowledge. Los Angeles County closed its beaches in the summer of 2020. Ex post facto, this makes no more sense than my family's masked hiking trips. But we need to learn from our mistakes and then let them go. We need to forgive the attack, too, because I thought schools should reopen and argued that kids as a group were not at high risk. I was called a teacher killer and a genocide heir. It wasn't pleasant, but feelings were high. An ad popped up, and I certainly don't need to dissect and rehash that time for the rest of my days. Moving on is crucial now because the pandemic created many problems that we still need to solve. Student test scores have shown historic declines, more so in math than in reading, and more so for students who were disadvantaged at the start. We need to collect data, experiment, and invest. Is high-dosage tutoring more or less cost-effective than extended school years? Why have some states recovered faster than others? Boy, I could answer that question. We should focus on questions like these because answering them is how we will help our children recover. Many people have neglected their health care over the past several years, notably routine vaccination rates for children for measles, for measles, pertussis, et cetera, are way down. Rather than debating the role that messaging about COVID vaccines had in this decline, we need to put all our energy into bringing those rates back up. Pediatricians and public health officials will need to work together on community outreach, and politicians will need to consider school mandates. The standard saying is that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, but dwelling on the mistakes of history can lead us to a repetitive doom loop as well. Let's acknowledge that we made some complicated choices in the face of deep uncertainty and then try to work together to build back and move forward. That's the Atlantic article.
Elizabeth?
And that was brought to you by Big Pharma. Yeah, that's interesting.
You freaking betcha. And you notice the little jab about nobody wants to take their freaking vaccines anymore. The medical community has raced itself, disgraced itself, and they expect people to go running back into fucking doctor's offices and say, medical me harder, baby. Are they kidding me? Cardiovascular exercise has commenced.
You did that was very well read. My neighbors just talking.
Okay,
I just threw these guys out. Get out of here.
That's okay. So if it's okay with you guys, unless Lily wants to comment on it, I know she's not feeling great, but unless Lily wants to comment on it, I would really like to go right into Jimmy Dore reading this article and his commentary, and he's kind of my spirit animal in this. So.
I'm good.
That sounds good.
I appreciate
you.
Oh, I love you. All right, 3, 2, 1.
There's this article out in the Atlantic, and this is it right here. It says, let's declare a pandemic amnesty. And I just want to remind people. Okay. And I just want to remind people that this is the kind of shit we were dealing with. people saying, don't do your own research and don't think critically. You know what don't do your own research means? It means don't read.
You know what the rabbit hole used to be called? The library.
Yeah. And so now they don't want you to go to the library and they don't want you to critically think. That's the kind of shit that was considered publishable in the New York Times. Stop thinking critically and stop going to the library. Stop reading. This is the kind of shit we were under, that I was living under COVID. Now, I got vaccine injured in April of 2021, and I started questioning the vaccine and the COVID policy, and everything I looked into, they were lying. They were lying about masks. They were lying about herd immunity. They were lying about natural immunity. They were lying about ivermectin. They were lying about early treatments. They were lying about what weren't they lying about? They lied about it all.
But what I will say, it did turn out they're safe and effective and slow to spread.
That's right. Oh, definitely. They're definitely safe and effective.
That hasn't been said.
That I have to say that they're safe and effective, and they don't. They had a Pfizer executive just admit to the European Parliament that they never even studied whether it would stop the transmission. They did. That's what she said, right? Wasn't that what we all learned?
Wait, you didn't study every little part of the thing we're saying?
She said they didn't even look into it.
She didn't want to go down the rabbit hole.
They were lying about, they were wrong on mandates. They were lying about that. They were lying about the truckers. They were lying about anybody who questioned them. They were lying about doctors and scientists from Stanford and Harvard and Yale who questioned Fauci and Collins at the NIH. They smeared them, and they were, so this wasn't, so what she's,
you know,
gonna,
what, Jimmy?
So I'm gonna,
they,
I'm gonna
give you.
So what I'm gonna, so I'm just gonna, spoiler alert, what this article does is pretend that people in good faith just got things wrong, and now that the information has been revealed, they all accept it. First of all, they still don't. They still are for vaccine mandates. They still hate the unvaccinated. They still don't understand the science around masks at all. They don't understand that one N95 mask protects you better than two surgical masks. So meaning you don't need anybody else to wear a mask to protect you. You should wear it if you want it, if you want that protection. They don't understand. They still don't care.
You know what the counterargument is to what you're saying?
What?
Don't be that guy.
Yeah. And I'm not, and by the way, I'm not talking, these weren't, again, these weren't people getting stuff wrong. Here's a guy who should have known way, way better.
Yeah,
and listen
wait,
to what
that's,
he says.
That's a good point. The thing of never assume malice when it might be incompetence. It's malice. Not so many more times than you think it is.
It is way more. Watch this.
When you talk about folks having the freedom to, you know, separate if they don't want to abide by these vaccine mandates, what would that look like on a practical level? Does that mean that folks need to stay home and have like groceries delivered to them? Does it mean like separated communities of folks who are unvaccinated, or just, you know, how do you think this would practically play out?
Same way as with people who say that I don't want to accept traffic rules. I suppose there were people who said it's an attack on my liberty to make me stop at a red light. It's government overreach.
Now, here's why that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And he should have known better. And this is unbelievable. Because when you get the vaccine, they make you stay there for 15 minutes after you get it to make sure you don't die. That's what I was told when I got it. You know what? When you go through a traffic light, I don't have to pull over 15 minutes, see if I die. That'd be a big difference between traffic lights and a mandated experimental medical treatment that you have no long-term data on, and that now we do, and we know that you are 1,000% wrong, but you know what he wanted to do to people who questioned it and didn't go along with Big Pharma and the government? You want to know what he wanted to do to them? Let's listen.
I don't want the state to have that power over my private life. Well, such people have to be, they should have the decency to remove themselves from the community. If they refuse to do that, then measures have to be taken to safeguard the community from them. Then comes the practical question that you ask, how can we get food to them? Well, that's actually their problem.
I just noticed another problem with this argument. If you don't want to obey traffic lights, they don't put you in an internment camp.
and keep food from you.
They might not let you drive if you really push it.
So I just love this. Chomsky, October 2020. Trump is basically Hitler. Vote Biden to stop Orange Hitler. Chomsky, October 2021. Biden has a responsibility to remove by starvation, if necessary, these subhuman creatures from society. And he was 1,000% wrong, and I've yet to see him apologize for it. And people will give him a pass for this. People won't, nobody will hold him responsible for saying this. And it would go a long way if he came out and talked about how egregiously wrong he was.
That's why we need COVID amnesty.
Right. But he won't. He doesn't. He's not asking for anybody's forgiveness for saying this horrible cretin-like bullshit.
Well, you know,
it's monstrous what he said, and people excuse him left and right because he's old.
Well, there's the look. There's the manufactured consent, Noam Chomsky, and then there's the guy that kind of sort of like Pol Pot.
Yeah, that's right. And so what makes this horrible is that in real time, I knew better than he did because I was smart enough to go to the guy who was one of the inventors of the mRNA vaccine technology. And he told me on my show in July of 2021 that we're never going to vaccinate our way out of this, that the vaccine is a leaky vaccine. And that means you're never going to stop the pandemic with this vaccine. He told me that.
So you listen to science.
So I, yeah. So that's me interviewing one of the top vaccine scientists in a world. And Chomsky was impressed. I guess he doesn't watch my show. I guess I don't know what he's watching or reading about vaccines or about the COVID-19 or about mandates or about traffic lights. But he's 100% wrong, 1,000%. And it was damaging. People lost their jobs. People got injured. There's lots of bad, but not least of which would be the emotional damage done by families who've been ripped apart by this, friendships who've been ended by this. And Chomsky doesn't have the character to come out strongly and say, I was wrong. You know who is doing that now? Tim Robbins, the actor, the former husband of Susan Sarandon, is coming out and saying this is bullshit, that these mandates are still in place in Hollywood, even after the New York State Supreme Court overturned the firing of the 70,000, of all those people who were fired because they wouldn't get vaccinated in New York State. They overturned it and they reinstated them. Not only that, they gave them back pay because they were 1,000% wrong. So Tim Robbins is a big person with integrity and dignity. He came out strongly, publicly on social media and said we should stop this. Where's Chomsky? Where is he? He's nowhere. And it would go a long way for me and this show if he did that. That's why I'm personally invested in this. And I was personally let down because Chomsky is one of my personal heroes, just like everybody else on the left. And to see him do stuff like that after he shit on healthcare activists, which is what he did, it was a double whammy. And nobody's making him apologize for it or even make amends. And so I'm going to show you, I'm going to play this for you because people are, there's a lot more people like us than you think. And this guy is a very smarty pants doctor. I think he just made him a professor and he's on some podcast and listen to what they have to say about this idea of amnesty.
Where people say, oh, now we know that it wasn't a good idea. So people say, oh, vaccine mandates. Oh, now we know the vaccines block transmission. It wasn't a good idea. It was like, no, it was never a good idea to ostracize people from society for being unvaccinated. That was a bad idea for all kinds of reasons, for moral reasons, for scientific reasons, for political reasons, for social reasons. It was obviously a bad idea. It's not now we know they don't block transmission. Yeah, that makes it an even worse idea. Omicron breakthrough infections, that makes it an even worse idea. But it was a bad idea to start with. And likewise, we really say, oh, now we know that cloth masks don't work. All that kind of mania and like forcing people to wear cloth masks, that didn't really make sense. I mean, there's still people who believe that cloth masks work, right? But people say, oh, now we know. It's like, no. First of all, we knew that in 2019 yeah. that they weren't going to work. And it's not that now we know. It was mandates in particular were always wrong because they weren't supported by high quality evidence. Because you shouldn't force people to do something when a recommendation would be fine and so on. And same thing for police involvement in public health, prolonged school closures, preventing people from meeting outdoors. It's not that now we know outdoors is safe or whatever.
It was always safe.
I just had a student go through all the literature on outdoor transmission. There's only one case ever reported, and it was in China in 2020, and that's it, you know. And it's that, well, that one wasn't even confirmed. It's not that now we know.
And that was the one that happened at the wet market.
Being funny.
That was the first one. That's how it got loose. It was in the wet market. It was outdoor. Okay. You know, that's really well said, and sorry to interrupt you, but I guess I feel the same way when people say, now we know. I was like, oh, well, let me tell you. In March of 2020, that was when I wrote an op-ed saying we should hear scientists with different views and not demonize them. That's the title instead. And the point was that maybe lockdown wasn't a great idea. And at minimum, even if you thought it was, you should be willing to have a dialogue with the people you thought who thought it didn't. And one of those people was John Ioannidis, who has a good track record and is a smart guy and is not some evil right-wing JetBlue, whatever, crazy conspiracy theory you've told yourself. And then by early spring of 2020, I knew that outdoor risk was zero, and that's why I would do all sorts of things outdoor. And if anything, I thought we should encourage outdoor behavior to try to take some of the pressure off indoor behavior and actually give people an outlet for socializing. I knew by spring that opening schools could be done totally safe because, thank God, Sweden had done the experiment, and half of Western Europe followed their lead, at least in elementary school, and the United States didn't, and I knew that.
So he's talking about stuff that he knew in 2020.
You know,
That's what he's talking about, stuff that they knew already. And so this article, which I still have yet to show you, is talking about, oh, now we know. No, we freaking knew back then, too.
Yeah, there's no way. I was going to say this before that, but there's no way that you knew before all the experts.
That's right.
You just are saying it.
I was the one willing to say it and stick my chin out and get my teeth kicked in and be called anti-vax and right-wing and a conspiracy theorist and aiding fascism and any other stupid fucking thing you could think of was hurled at me by everybody I know.
Well, I know this sounds cynical, Jimmy, but I almost suspect that they just were already looking for a reason to ostracize a whole chunk of people, and this was a handy way to go.
Very
back.
Handy. This was exactly it. There's a video out there that got 700,000-800,000 views talking about how I'm a vaccine grifter, even though I'm the only one with the balls to tell the truth about the COVID policy, and I got it right, and I'm being proven right every fucking day, just like I was right about Russiagate, Syriagate. Now I'm right about this, COVID lockdowns, right about masks, I'm right about the whole goddamn thing, because it doesn't take a genius to get this shit right. It takes someone with balls to fucking actually say it out loud.
Well, Jimmy, you can't spell coward without cow.
So let's get back to this.
The mistake. And I knew when the AAP said we should reopen schools, that was the right idea. And I knew when Trump echoed it, it was the right idea. But what I didn't know was that they would change their tune just because Trump said it. And that, to me, blew me away.
And so we were following the science, and we were saying that the teachers' unions were wrong. We're very big union supporters. Steph was a union leader in the teachers' union her whole career. And people tried to make it out like we were attacking teachers. No, we were actually following the science and saying that the schools should be reopened, and we were right. And, of course, we're being proven correct. This article proves us correct in The Atlantic. Now The Atlantic agrees with us. So anyway, here we go.
New cloth mask didn't work. I could read all the randomized trials to date, and I knew we should be doing more randomized trials, and Trish Greenhall and others didn't think we should. That was a mistake. I knew we should reopen certainly by the fall, if not have already reopened by then. We had German data that showed that was safe. I knew we shouldn't have changed the number of cases we look at as the primary statistical analysis plan of the Pfizer trial merely to delay the product. I knew we shouldn't have done that. That was a mistake. I didn't sign that letter. I knew that when the vaccine came out that the way we prioritized the rollout was misguided, putting a 20-year-old resident ahead of an 88-year-old.
So when he's talking about when they rolled out the vaccine, they prioritized giving it to medical workers. He goes, you're going to give it to a 20-year-old resident before you give it to an 80-year-old woman? That doesn't make any sense. And that's exactly right. They were wrong about that, too. They should have had targeted. They should have targeted the whole COVID policy should have been targeted. And that was called the Barrington Declaration. But guess what? Those scientists, they weren't just said they were wrong. They just weren't disagreed with. They weren't even just dismissed. There were articles written to smear them and slander them in The Intercept, in news, in everywhere you could look, they did to try to smear and slander those people as some kind of right-wing grifters. They're from Stanford and Harvard and Yale. They're the tops in their fields, the most cited in their fields. And they smeared those people. They weren't getting it. These weren't good faith efforts to try to get it right. right and they just got it wrong. No, this was a criminal conspiracy to silence anybody who went against Big Pharma's narrative, and it succeeded.
You know what's amazing? What's the guy's name, the doctor?
Dr. Vinny Prasad.
Him saying, like, what I didn't think they would do is just because Trump said it, they would do the opposite. That's the thing. It's really shocking. Somebody's like, especially a guy's a doctor who's smart. You didn't think that's how it worked?
Right? Yeah, of course. there's a little bit more of this.
In the community, that was misguided. And then I knew the mandates were not going to do anything of good, either that it didn't provide an additional benefit to that third party, and that there's a downside to imposing something on the population. And that downside has so many spillover effects in so many domains that we have yet to live with. And then I've known that pretty much since the vaccine, I think most of our policy was really misguided, like paying for Paxlovid, not doing randomized studies, living in fear. I mean, so when they say, like, now we know better, I'm like, yeah, I've known all along.
Exactly. And so here, let me just breeze through this article for you. If you're still interested, here it comes. Some of these choices, we just made choices and we were wrong. Some of the choices turn out to be better than others. Take example close to my own work. There is an emerging, if not universal, consensus that schools in the U.S. were closed for too long. You are wrong about that. There are millions of people. You go on Twitter and say they should, and see what happens to you. You're going to be called a eugenicist if you say that they should open schools again.
She's trying. She knows it's true and is trying to make it like there's an emerging thing that people are saying. That's what that is.
She's trying to convince you. No, everybody's now coming along round to this. Anyway, the health risks of in-school spread were relatively low. Right? And you know when we knew that? We knew that in 2020 because of Sweden. I knew that because of Sweden. The health risk of in-school spread were relatively low, whereas the cost of students' well-being and educational progress were high. Yes. The latest figures on learning loss are alarming. Yeah. What about – and people who were ringing the warning bell were smeared. They just weren't disagreed with. But in the spring and summer of 2020, we had only glimmers of information. Okay. Reasonable people who cared about children and teachers, advocated on both sides of the reopen. There's nothing wrong with advocating. We're talking about people who slandered, smeared, discredited, and lied about people who they disagreed with. That's what this is about. And you know what you need first? You need an act of contrition. So as soon as Chomsky and all those other people who called me anti-vax, called me whatever those names are, I'm enabling fascism, whatever bullshit they could think of, when they apologize to me, I'll be glad to say your apology, you're forgiven, apology accepted, no problem, no hard feelings even though you said all that horrible shit about me on social media. No hard feelings if you apologize.
If Chomsky apologizes and gives you three wishes, will you?
Obviously, some people intend. So this is what she's writing in The Atlantic. Obviously, some people intended to mislead and made wildly irresponsible claims. Who are those people? She never says. You know who those people were? Dr. Fauci.
Yeah.
And everybody in social media and everybody in corporate media who said ivermectin was horse paste. Those were people who were misleading people on purpose. You know who that was? Everybody in corporate media. And now you just want to let them go without apologizing or admitting they were lying. At least Joe Rogan got Dr. Sanjay Gupta to admit that everybody at CNN, including him, was lying about ivermectin. They weren't just kidding. They were lying to mislead you. That's who did it. Fauci, the FDA, the goddamn everybody in the corporate media. This wasn't some fucking random thing of people getting it wrong accidentally. Remember when the only thing she points to is when Trump, somebody, remember when the public health community, oh shit. Remember when the public health community had to spend a lot of time and resources urging Americans not to inject themselves with bleach? That's the only thing she mentions. She doesn't mention the ivermectin thing where they showed people in winter coats standing outside Oklahoma emergency rooms in August. She didn't talk about that. She doesn't talk about all the lies they told about immunity, natural immunity, herd immunity, masks. They don't talk about any of that stuff, about transmission, contraction. She doesn't talk about anything. This is what she points to.
Mm-hmm.
That was bad. She says that was bad.
Yeah.
Misinformation was and remains a huge problem. But she doesn't talk about the misinformation coming from the establishment. Isn't that amazing?
Well, no, she says it right here.
But most errors were made by people who were working in earnest for the. They were not. They were lying at the top of their lungs. Fauci admitted he was lying about herd immunity. He admitted he was lying about masks. He admitted it, even though they've rewritten the history if you try to look it up on Google.
For the good of.
And I'm going to be honest. I don't believe anybody injected themselves with bleach to fight COVID. I think that's media bullshit. But let's say I'm wrong. And if anybody really did do that, how long were those people going to live anyway?
Oh, bleach works?
But it's not like they were just about, those people were just about to cure cancer and they fell for the bleach hoax. They, at The Atlantic, they were doing earnest misinformation, yeah. Kurt. That's what was happening there. The good kind.
You know,
not the bad kind like Alex Jones. He wasn't earnest when he and now he's being sued for $2 trillion because he wasn't earnest. So if you take earnesty away from misinformation, $2 trillion. But earnesty is your shield from prosecution. I was earnest. You don't think Alex Jones was earnest when in his drunken, maniac, coke-infused rant about the... I think he was earnest.
To the point of borderline insanity,
To the point of borderline insanity, I would say he was earnest. Jesus. Given the amount of uncertainty, almost every position was taken on every topic. And on every topic, someone was eventually proved right, and someone else was proved wrong. No, that's still not true. There are still vaccine mandates for kids going to college. There's still vaccine mandates on every set in Hollywood. My friend, I have friends who can't go on auditions because they are standing up against the mandate. This isn't true. She's making it up. They've been proved wrong, but they're not admitting they've been proved wrong. Nobody's apologized to me. Has anybody apologized to you? Has Fauci come out and say, oh, we got everything wrong?
I have to just take mild comfort in famous people's facial paralysis. That's the only thing I get out of it.
And she listened to this. She goes, in some instances, the right people were right for the wrong reasons.
What?
But she never says what those are. So the right people were right for the wrong reasons. What in the name of Jesus Fauci Christ does that even mean?
What does that mean? The right people were right for the wrong reasons? Who cares what reasons they were right for?
Well, what?
And also the right people.
The right people. I don't know. The people who got it right for whatever reason may want to gloat. For whatever reason. Maybe because... how about they just want their fucking jobs back?
Yeah, they may want.
Maybe they want a legal settlement. Maybe they want that too. Not only gloat. What the
they
F?
They say legal settlements are the best gloating.
Those who got it wrong for whatever reason may feel defensive and retrench into a position that doesn't accord with the facts. First of all, what's this May shit, okay? You mean they will start doing that, and they already have been doing that all along. Or they may write the most long-winded bullshit article in The Atlantic.
Yeah.
hey, why not say that those who were wrong all along are going to continue to spread misinformation because that's what the fuck they're doing. And they're still doing it. Go on Twitter.
I'm going to burn this into my... This
yes.
Some people, for whatever reason...
For whatever reason, are going to keep lying.
They may... No, but I won't just say that. I want to... I say it the Atlantic way.
Yeah.
They may feel defensive and retrench into a position...
Retrench!
That doesn't accord with the facts of my wheelhouse and...
Otherwise lying about the
what
science.
What an insufferable...
Yes.
To even write that sentence is like you're trying to spread misinformation.
I know.
All right.
I know, Kurt, I'm with you. It's all of this gloating and defensiveness continues to gobble up a lot of the social energy and drive the culture wars. You know what is gobbling it up? Fucking Big Pharma funded propaganda that nobody's debunking.
Hey, we need that social energy for Ukraine.
That's right.
Stop these energy guzzling topics.
These discussions are heated, unpleasant, and ultimately unproductive in the face of so much uncertainty. Getting something right had a hefty element of luck. No, it fucking didn't.
Does that mean some of us are billionaires now? Like extra billionaires?
You got to get luck. Like it was like flipping a coin. Do are mandates good or bad? I don't know. I'm going to get lucky. I didn't get lucky.
The balls roll funny for everybody, kids.
I didn't get lucky. I looked into it. You know, that's called doing your own research.
You were
prescient? I was prescient.
I thought prescience like ESP. Did you just read the thing?
No, I just read. All I had to do was read, and I interviewed
a
guy who was a leading vaccine researcher. That's all I had to do, and I knew what was going on. And similarly, getting something wrong wasn't a moral failing, but they turned it into one.
It was a joke.
They turned it into, it was a moral failing, you absolute craven bourgeois twit. The moral failing of being a status-obsessed careerist. You know the main moral failing of pyramids? You know the main moral failing our pyramid scheme of a nation is built on? It was a moral failing. What Chomsky did was a moral failing. What Chomsky did was a moral failing. Wanting to enforce an experimental medical treatment with no long-term studies on other people, or else they would lose their livelihood or their ability to travel or visit, that was a moral failing, and it should never be forgotten. It should be forgiven, but it should never be forgotten. And for in order for it to be forgiven, the people who did that moral failing need to admit it and make a sincere act of contrition. That's what your article should be saying, that those motherfuckers who got this wrong should be making a sincere act of contrition. Not that we should look the other way while they continue to retrench into lying.
Also, like, I mean, you already can't be sued for it, so is that so much to ask?
Right.
It's not like you're liable.
We have to put these fights aside and declare a pandemic amnesty. Do you think it will be safe? Do you think the pandemic amnesty will be a safe and effective treatment? Because personally, I worry about the possible cases of breakthrough. Go fuck yourself. We can leave out the willful purveyors of actual misinformation. Again, she won't say who it is. I'll say who it was. It was Fauci, who was an intentional misinformer. The corporate media, everybody who lied about ivermectin, those are the people who are on purpose.
Every prick in her social circle.
That's right. How about everybody in your social circle and everybody who works at The Atlantic? How about that? By the way, The Atlantic are the people who smeared Dr. Robert Malone.
Of course.
So you smear a guy who's at the top of his field, you try to discredit him, and then now the same goddamn publication is saying, hey, you know what? No blood, no foul, no harm, no foul. There was lots of harm. And you have to make contrition for that. You have to make amends for that. And so that's where we got to go.
Isn't this the magazine of, like, you know, my fiance is wearing a dress to fight masculinity. I'm not sure if I'm attracted to it.
I don't know if this
that's
is that.
The kind of problems they deal with.
So at the end, she even says that she was a victim of this. She says, because I thought schools should reopen and argued that kids as a group were not at high risk, I was called a teacher killer and a genocider.
That's not how you spell the C word.
I know. It wasn't pleasant, but feelings were high, and I certainly don't need to dissect and rehash that time for the rest of my days. No, but those people need to make an act of contrition. That's what needs to happen.
It's a thing, too.
I agree that she was the victim. I agree that that happened to her, and it was shitty that that happened to her, and I'm sorry that that happened to you. But this isn't the way to fix all this. You're wrong. She's 100% wrong about this. And you misframed the argument all the way through.
And you created that world with your dumb nonsense. By all the people this comes back on,
right,
they're all part of it until it happens to them.
So finally she got the gumption to say we should reopen schools, and they shit on her. Finally.
Oh, is that weird? It seems like those were the crazy conspiracy nuts.
So anyway, that's the end of that. And so everybody knows how I feel. I just want to make sure I add that the vaccines, while they don't stop completely the transmission of the virus, or the vac- they do slow the transmission and contraction.
More slowly.
They do slow the. I have to tell that's the science from YouTube, and
I'm
fully
vaccinated, and when I got COVID anyway, it slowly came on.
It's slow.
So I can attest to all the viewers that it does work as.
Yeah, it does work. So just because we all got vaccinated and we all got COVID doesn't mean.
And then I got an extra injection of context.
Yes. So I'm doing this because these are the rules, and I have to follow the rules. Okay. And by the way, the vaccine.
Okay, there we go. I know it was long, but I feel like he is my spirit animal. And not only that, but he was vaccinated. Jimmy got vaccinated. He's vaccine injured. Which is why he, at the beginning of COVID, I was ready to unsubscribe to Jimmy because he got vaccinated. We're talking about masks, all of that stuff. And then he got vaccine injured and started studying and started being a voice for it, you know? So he's my spirit animal, and I think he's 100% right.
He had me cracking up a couple of times. How about it? How about a dose of fuck you? I like that. Okay, did he comment on the part, because I want to comment on this, in the article where people were told that the quote-unquote experts spent way too much time telling people not to inject bleach. Do you guys remember that, what that was about?
Yes.
Yeah.
That came off of the news conference when they used to have the lady with the tablecloths and Fauci and Trump were out there. Yes.
Those are maize and scarves, not tablecloths.
Oh.
But she's still a fraud.
Well,
go ahead.
But you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say the tablecloth lady. So, Trump eloquently, if he had more of an eloquent style of speaking, we probably wouldn't be where we are now. But he tried to espouse the benefits of other treatments for this. And he said there's even, you could even, inject bleach. He had no idea, they were telling him what it's like, and that's what came out of his mouth. And it wasn't exactly what they were telling him, but there were other ways of cleaning the body out, and that's where it came from.
Well,
and they ran with
that. I watched it live.
Yep, he didn't say that. He said they are doing a number of studies of trying to fight this disease. One of them has to do with intravenous bleach, and they were talking about using light, ultraviolet light.
Right.
He was talking about all of the work that was being done. And to this day, there's still idiots like Oster saying that he told people to inject bleach and that the experts had to waste time stopping people from it. No one was going to do it. No one was going to run out and buy a needle and inject bleach. That was a lie. He never said it, and no one was doing it. No one was stupid enough.
Can I tell you what actually, since I watched it live, can I tell you what actually happened during that press conference?
Oh, yes.
Sure.
There were government officials. I believe it was Homeland Security related. I can't be sure about that. But they had government officials who had tested the coronavirus and came out and said, these are the things that kill it. Heat, humidity, and sunlight. Those are the things that were
and
said
that was
during
when,
that
Danielle?
Same exact infamous press conference. Nobody
yes.
talked about
and
it.
What,
nobody asked
when
me.
Was
so,
that?
Hold on. Because, hold on. Because I was, so as I'm watching and the questions start pouring in, the first question was about injecting bleach. And I was like, what the F? Nothing was really said about bleach. And the mind-blowing thing that happened in that exact same press conferences was humidity and sunlight. Nobody, it was like they were trying to suppress that information by talking about bleach. All right, I'm done.
They tried to ban sunlight.
Yeah, they didn't want to talk about bleach. No, they wanted to focus upon bleach, not sunlight, and that's the things that would really make you get better. But
they wanted us in our home
propaganda
and afraid
to divide us. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And what did they use? The internet and TikTok and the avalanche of
scumbags
propaganda to distract us from, the simple things. While they've created laws to, tie the hands of doctors so that they can't even utter a real statement to you now without going to jail. And I just find it interesting that this article of the amnesty theory pops up in the Atlantic right around the midterms. And it goes right back to common sense goes out the window, comes right back to politics, because if you're, Trump supporter, you won't get vaccinated. It just divides and creates this craziness that we need not have, because everyone's medical rights are their own, should be their own personal choice, just like their sex life. It's nobody's business what I do for treatment, what kind of doctor I go with. But that's out the window too. But instead of the real deep things, like, they have created a Nazi-like environment with laws. They passed all these laws to where even if you wanted to, you couldn't.
Oh, my God.
You couldn't hurt somebody, and there's really not much you could do about it without, becoming a domestic terrorist. They have created all these laws in the interim of this to stifle anyone speaking out, asking questions, daring to say, no, I'm not going to do this. And they've created – and that's what we need to be talking about, not so much this other form of distraction. And here's one thing that no one's talking about is that in Canada, Trudeau passed a law that goes into effect in January that it's now legal to euthanize – people who no longer want to live, if they're like deemed mentally ill, it's perfectly okay for a doctor to put them to sleep, just like going to get an abortion. And if you don't see where the slippery slope of if that came here, because you can be labeled mentally ill for just anxiety and being on Xanax here. They can pigeonhole you and off you go, and you're going to the special
ward. Or if you
want to
buy a
hospital.
Gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And but they but we'll talk about the who was right and who was wrong during the lockdown. We'll talk about that instead of the real things. And it's like, oh,
okay.
Gosh.
I hate to interrupt, Elizabeth.
No,
but I would like to give Lily one more word on the topic because she's spoken hardly any. And then I would like to get into the good news report, if that's okay. I'd like it.
Absolutely.
Lily,
well,
are there?
I enjoyed the Jimmy Dore thing. I was not aware that he was vaccinated, so it's funny that you, mentioned that and we're talking about that because I almost typed in the chat, questions about that because he had said, that they wanted him to stay there for 15 minutes to make sure he didn't die. But I don't follow Jimmy Dore, clearly, as much as I should. So anyway, that was new for me. And it's cool, I'm not happy that people got injured, but it is, beneficial, I guess, when that does happen, that they join our side, and start telling the truth about what they've experienced, in all the died suddenly groups. And there's a ton of nurses and doctors in there that anonymously share what's happening. So that's really cool. And then that I can't remember her name because I don't really I try not to pay much attention to these people, but that one celebrity or model, whatever, dressed up as a worm parasite for Halloween, and that was definitely mocking us because they have found now that these blood clots behave like a parasite, and there's one large clot that feeds the other one that looks like an octopus or whatever, that branches out. And that's the graphene oxide that is sentient and can regrow itself. and takes over the nervous system. So, like, that stuff is interesting because they're admitting it, right, just not in a way that most people would understand, I guess. So that's, like, still a frustration, you know. And, I mean, there needs to be some sort of accountability. Like, we saw in New York where they gave people their jobs back with back pay. You know, if these people are truly sorry, which I don't believe they are, then, you know, as Jimmy Dore said, Fauci would tell the truth. And also, you know, they would be paying reparations to the people that they've attempted to destroy. So that's kind of where I stand on that. But then to Elizabeth's point, she's very right about that law. And, in fact, they're already doing that. And this, the fourth leading cause of death in Canada already is the assisted suicide. They have, like, these pods, and you can go put yourself in a pod and choose not to exist anymore if you don't want to. And they make it sound, you know, like it's a beneficial thing for people that are, like, terminally ill and in a lot of pain. You know, and I do think that they should have sovereignty. And, you know, if you're dying and you're in a lot of pain, you should be able to choose, you know, like, with the last amount of dignity that you have to, you know, do whatever you like. However, they are using it specifically for young people. Like, there is a huge group of people 18 to 30 that are using this because, you know, like, we're all in an existential crisis. And, you know, if you aren't fortunate enough to be reading a lot of spiritual things that show us that everything's going to be fine, you know, it's very easy to get stuck in this dismal, everything is awful and is going to just get worse kind of mentality, right? And so a lot of people are choosing that as a way to deal with this impending doom that they feel, and it's really unfortunate.
And they can be done without the parents' consent. Your child can go to school and then not come back because they've chosen to do this. They legally don't have to let you know. That's been passed. Thanks for bringing that up.
I've been watching it for a while, and it's really concerning. You know, and it's one of those situations where I have to almost pay, like, a verbal penance or something, right? Because I do support a certain level of people being able to choose their own life and death, right? But not for those kind of, you know, but it is a slippery slope because I want to support that for people that have terminal illnesses and are in pain. And, you know, I mean, if I was diagnosed with, like, Alzheimer's dementia, like, I would want to choose that, right? Because for years I've taken care of people with that, and it's awful and so sad. But anyway, you know, so I want to support other people's sovereignty. But at the same time, you know, like, who's making the decisions and in what way are they making these decisions and, you know, who's counseling them on these kinds of decisions, you know, and, like, what alternatives are being offered. Like, all of those are questions that are unanswered, you know, and so I may have been on the wrong side with my former, you know, support of that specific thing, so.
Elizabeth's example specifically was for those with mental illness. By its very diagnosis, they don't have the capacity to make that decision for themselves, and they're allowing it. If, you know, I want to read the bill, but if it's for mental health issues, for depression or something like that, or schizophrenia, and, allowing them.
They have opened the scope of mental illness could be anything and anyone.
And
that's the sad thing. That's the sad thing.
The reason for abortion, actually.
Yeah.
Goodness sake.
Why is that?
Yeah, this is why I'm not. Like, this is why I said it was like a secret blessing.
Let's do it. Let's do it. So the good news is that there's going to be a red wave, potentially what they would call a red tsunami on November 8th. I'm encouraging and supporting everyone listening to this radio program to go out and vote because we tried it after we had the election stolen from us. We tried it because they said it was going to be better if Democrats were elected, although I knew better, but we tried it, and it's obviously a failed experiment. Let's do something else. And it looks like we're going to get our wish. So having said that, it's not just Congress critters that are being that are running for re-election. It's not just senators. It's governors. It's school boards. It's city councils. It's mayors. It's state legislatures. This it's dog catchers, right? Sheriffs being elected across this country. And so last week was all about censorship. Is somebody rattling dishes or something? I can hear dishes rattling. Anyway,
I was on mute. It wasn't me.
It wasn't you? Okay. Now, whoever it is, mute yourself. Last week was all about censorship, but and Jimmy Dore touched on it, that all of the voices that we should have been hearing from throughout this entire process were censored on a platform called Twitter, and then from Twitter it was also Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all of the places where what we would call a public square now, where our voices could be heard. We were shadow banned. We were kicked off the platform. Come to find out in the Missouri case that we talked about last week, that not only were we censored, but our thoughts were collected as a government edict. It's called cognitive infrastructure. And our speech and thoughts are now belong to the government of the United States. So bad. The good news is after this red wave happens, apparently, now keep in mind, politicians bullshit, but they're saying they're going after these things that matter to us. I don't want my thoughts and speech to belong to the federal government. It doesn't. So according to all the stuff that we're reading, this election is going to be something called the Red Tsunami, like historic, never before seen in the history of the United States. So with that as a preface, I was going to read some of the comments about the COVID amnesty, but I think we covered it pretty well. So I may come back to it, but for now, I'm going to move on.
Since we just finished up the segment, do you mind?
They're not good news. They're sad. I will do it. I don't have a problem doing that, Danny.
All right. I'll make an allowance just this once.
Okay, but if you want me to, I will. But because it is actually good news, because Twitter's no longer censoring those voices.
Yay.
So a bunch of those accounts that were taken down are still suspended, but a lot of people went back on with new handles, like I did. My old account is suspended, but the voices that stayed on Twitter are getting, like, Cat Turd. You guys, I don't know if this is a funny name. It's a cat. And his handle is Cat Turd. And
he's
100,000.
He's also a prophet.
Yeah, right. He got to 100,000 followers in about 72 hours as soon as they took the brakes off on Twitter. Okay? So that's unheard of. So it's happening. It's working. I the first thing that I did was I got on Twitter and I said, Trump won in 2020, and I didn't get any kind of a little flag, or I didn't get thrown off, or, you know, and a lot of people tested the algorithm by saying men can't get pregnant and so on and so forth. But Buck Sexton did a question on Twitter, and he said, what was your most powerful memory of COVID tyranny? And I posted immediately the guy on the surfboard in Oceanside, arresting the guy surfing here in San Diego. But he got so many replies.
Paddleboarding, I think.
Yeah, paddleboarding, surfing, paddleboarding. But this first one, it was a woman named Kimberly, and she said, looking at my dad in his coffin on a fucking Zoom call before it crashed and I missed the entire service. Sorry for my language, but I will never forgive them or forget. On and on. My niece losing her life's work in a restaurant in Detroit that was closed because of Whitmer's lockdown. Here's my most powerful moment. Being forced to wait in the parking lot and waiting room while my wife of 40 years was in ICU trying to recover from bypass surgery. They wouldn't let our kids see her in the hospital Thursday, gone on Sunday. I will never forget or forgive. And they go on and on and on, forcing me to become a teacher while my kids sat home and did schoolwork on their Chromebooks while all while my teenagers slipped into depression, then forcing them to wear masks when they were finally allowed to go back to school, and pretty much everything else they did. And Buck replied, and they were wrong about all of it. Some in human history, natural immunity was dismissed by our experts. And it goes on and on and on. So people are pissed. And you know, we started this conversation about how did we allow them to do it? I don't think we're going to. I think they're going to pay. That is my prediction. I'm not sure I'll bet a dollar on it like I have been known to in the past, but I think that I think I'd be willing to bet 50 cents. So to our that I want to tell you is that Facebook is getting ready to lay off half of their workforce next week. So first it was Twitter, now it's Facebook. Meta, they call itself. Meta is laying off half of its workforce next week. Let's see. Ted Cruz says that the first thing he's going to do is impeach DHS Secretary Mayorkas as soon as they win this red wave. And AG Garland. He said that on Tuesday, he went on the Charlie Kirk show, where the two discussed Monday's news regarding the Department of Homeland Security and its collusion with big tech. It's coming, you guys. After leaks showed that the DHS began meeting with Twitter, Facebook, and Wikipedia to coordinate content moderation in 2020. This, along with Biden regime's blatant use of a politicized DHS, FBI, IRS, and other agencies, prompted Cruz to call for the resignation of high-ranking officials like DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas and Attorney General Merrick Garland. Speaking of the leaks, Senator Ted Cruz said, "I wish I could say I was shocked, but I'm not. We've seen this more and more with federal government corruptly getting into bed with big tech. We now know also that the FBI was actively urging big tech to censor the story about Hunter Biden's laptop. They were doing it. The FBI told big tech that it was Russian disinformation. That was totally false. We now know the story about Hunter Biden's laptop was true. It was accurate, and big tech censored it. So they're going to go after him. I believe it's going to work. I believe we're going to get them." So back to the Missouri versus Biden case. So they are actually suing the Biden administration, which to sue an entire administration it takes an act of God. And it's going back to the – is this the same article? I don't know. I hope I didn't download the wrong one. Let me see. This was about the depositions again. And they're saying that the government was saying started filing motions to pull from being deposed, and in other cases to delay it due to circumstances they outlined that are inane and ridiculous. Then they filed a mandamus in the appellate court. So I think we did this last week, but there's more. The judge was looking at their stuff, and apparently every single one, the judge said he has to sit for the deposition. Vivek Murthy needs to sit. He clearly did act to censor speech. Who else? There's a one lady that is for maternity leave. She says she doesn't want to. She has to sit. And he said the court finds the parties wouldn't suffer irreparable harm by sitting for depositions first. And second, Easterly insists that the reason why they're going to sit right now is because she needs her maternity leave. I'll just leave that there so you can get a sense of their priorities. They are going to sit for depositions, and they know what's coming. Fauci got up on a show, wherever it was, they got a quote from him saying, Fauci says China failed the world on COVID-19, that they gave him incorrect information. Nice try. You're still getting investigated, according to Bannon. This last week, though, something really, really crazy and, in a way, like I always say, good, because it's demonstrating just how far this administration has gone into fascism. Sometime during the last year, in 2021, Bern Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips. Pop quiz, who are they? You guys know who they are? Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips.
DNC lawyers.
Ah, wrong.
Damn it. Okay, I'm muting.
Buzzer. Anybody? Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips are True the Vote. True the Vote is the organization that gave Dinesh D'Souza the data, the film, the information, the geo-tracking on all the ballot mules in the 2020 election.
That was my second guess.
And yes, yes. So True the Vote is also the organization that the IRS investigated during the Obama years and prevented them from getting their 501c3 status for just the correct amount of time past the election. So she's been in this game for a long time. So after the 2020 election, none of us stopped, because we knew what had happened, and there was no way you were going to convince us that that election wasn't stolen by chicanery, by ballot stuffing, by, you know, all the crap that happened on election night, on and on. And there was a lot of theories, and there was a lot of evidence to support it, even though everybody kept saying without evidence. So Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips never stopped looking at the machines, looking at the companies that run the machines, the voting machines, because that was one of the things that were like, there's a problem with these freaking machines. So they found a company called Konnench, K-O-N-N-E-A-C-H. Konnench collects and holds a database of people who work the polls in the United States, American citizens. And they have a contract with the government of the United States to keep this data, to store it safely. And part of their contract is that they would not store it outside. Their servers would not be outside. The data would not be outside the United States of America. Makes sense. Konnench is a Chinese company. Okay? So they get these contracts, Konnench does, to store American poll workers' data, which includes obviously all of their PII, personally identifying information, Social Security, birth date, address, everything. And they say in their contract, yes, we will store this data safely, but it will be stored here in the United States per our contract. Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips go digging around, and they find out that this poll worker data is being stored in China on a server. They freak out, of course, and they make an announcement what they discovered. Konnench sues them for defamation. In the meantime, they're trying to get the FBI to look at this. They're like, look at this. This is a breach of national security. This data is being stored in China. And the FBI is like, okie doke, wow, great information. Thanks for that information. See you later. Bye. although they didn't say that. They pretended like they were doing something with it. But we know what's happening with the FBI. They're corrupt as the day is long. And so does Greg Phillips and Catherine Engelbrecht. So they took it to, oh my gosh, you're going to laugh, to a district attorney in Los Angeles named Gascon. Does that name ring a bell?
Sure does.
Who is he, Danielle?
He's the district attorney of Los Angeles who basically revoked the cash bail law, doesn't prosecute
yep.
anybody. There's actually footage of him, of a teen running down a mother and a baby in a stroller with a car, running down a baby and a mother. And Gaston let him off with what was
probation.
It? Parole.
Probation.
Yeah, done. That's who this guy is. But all of a sudden,
yes.
this guy is, you know, laser focused on this one case. All right, that's my answer. I'll let you finish.
So Gascon, just by the skin of his teeth, survived a recall in the county of Los Angeles. All the district attorneys started a recall petition. It got enough signatures, but the ballot failed. Or maybe they didn't get enough signatures. I think that's what it was. They said they collected enough signatures, and then when they counted the signatures, which should sound familiar to all of you, there weren't enough, supposedly, legitimate
right.
signatures. Fine.
Because
yeah.
this is what they did. This is what they did to Freeman, actually. Freeman and I aren't really friends anymore because he went cuckoo virus on me with the mask stuff. But we ran for Congress together, and I got all of my signatures, no problem. And it's not much. It's like 40 signatures, get 60 signatures just in case,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
what they do is they go in and they analyze the signature on the voter.
Yes.
yes. And so what they do is even after we go in and we make sure that it's valid, they can still go in and say, that loop in that D is just a little bit sus. So rejected.
Right. So that's how Gascon managed to avoid being recalled, because he's such a disaster for Los Angeles County. He was one of those George Soros progressive district attorneys. But in the meantime, so back to Greg and Catherine, they're shopping this information around to sheriffs and district attorneys all over the state of California, because that's where Connie is based in. They take it to Gascon. He arrests the guy because he looked at the evidence and said, there's enough evidence in here to indict the guy. They catch him going out of the country with no cell phone, no suitcase, getting on a plane for China. They arrested him at the airport. Okay. So in the meantime, this guy's, you know, on with a bracelet. Okay. So he's out on bail with a bracelet, right? But the defamation suit against Catherine and Greg is still going on. They go to court, and the judge says, if you don't tell me who the informant is, I'm putting you in jail on contempt of court until you give me the information. Greg and Catherine say, we're not doing it. It's a civil suit. No one goes to jail for that crap. They were arrested 7 days ago, and they're still in custody. So, True the Vote founder Catherine Engelbrecht delivers message from prison after refusing to reveal confidential source. True the Vote founder Catherine Engelbrecht delivered an audio tape message from prison on Wednesday to thank all of her and True the Vote investigator Greg Phillips supporters for their prayers and kind messages of support. They are currently in jail on contempt of court charges stemming from a defamation suit brought by Connie CEO Eugene Yu. Yu was arrested for storing U.S. voting data on servers in China after a tip from Phillips. Yu brought the suit after he was charged in Los Angeles for violating the company's contract with L.A. County because Konik, which makes software to manage payroll and scheduling for election workers, had allegedly been storing data about U.S. elections on servers in China. Yu's arrest came from a tip from Phillips, and he and Engelbrecht were told by the court to reveal the source that led them to make that tip to law enforcement. Federal Judge Kenneth Hoyt held the pair in contempt of court after they refused to identify that confidential informant who helped them obtain information that led to evidence that the E. Lansing, Michigan-based election software company Conic was allegedly storing election-related data on servers in China. Conic CEO Eugene Yu was released on $500,000 bond, is currently under house arrest until his next hearing, which is set for November 17th, was called a flight risk by a Michigan prosecutor and ordered to wear an ankle monitor and remain in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office has accused Yu of stealing the personal identifying information of poll workers and that the stolen data was stored on servers in China in violation of Conic's contract with the Los Angeles County, with Los Angeles County. Yu is now suing Engelbrecht and Phillips for defamation. So, more to follow. In the meantime, lift those folks up. My final story is kind of a weird one. Australian Parliament has apologized to Julian Assange's father after security staff seized a bag of books from him at the building's entrance back in August. He was on his way into Parliament, and they took a bag of books from him. From Julian Assange's family during a visit to the MPs, Crikey is the name of the newspaper, by the way. A top Parliament official wrote to Assange's father, John Shipton, this week to extend his sincerest apologies for the August incident. Department of Parliamentary Services Secretary Rob Stefanik also wrote to Green Senator David Shoebridge to say his department's screening procedures have been clarified to ensure that books are not categorized as protest material. Backflip came after the department initially defended the decision to seize the books. Crikey revealed last month the department had just injured by mistakenly claiming the books had been identified as protest material because Assange's brother Gabriel Shipton and his father had apparently arrived at Parliament as part of a group of demonstrators rallying outside for Assange's political rescue. So they messed with his daddy, and that's not okay. They've been messing with this man for how many years has he been in custody now, you guys know?
Oh, good Lord. What, since 2012? Let me check.
Yep. Yep, 10 years.
He's been in there 10 years. Bless his heart.
Bless his heart.
So, Trump's out on the campaign trail. Looks like he's going to announce a bid to run for the presidency in 2024. Looks like he'll be doing it either tomorrow at the rally in Ohio before the midterms, which is supposed to be a no-no. It's supposed to be a no-no. We'll see.
It was 2012, by the way.
Yeah, so it's 10 years that Julian Assange has been held as a political prisoner. And now they're harassing his father. His father's probably got to be quite elderly. Anyway, I want you guys to have a wonderful week. I have to go to the feed store and buy feed for my chickens because I won't have time to do it tomorrow morning because I work a different schedule now. So,
how much is it costing you?
Elizabeth, my feed prices have gone up about 40%. This last couple of weeks have been rough for me financially. And so I've been buying it at the feed store just down the hill because I can't afford the freaking gas to go to the one out in Vista. It's gone up about 40% over the last 2 years, which is almost unsustainable. I want you guys to keep praying because I'm debating whether to keep them or not, to keep my chickens. It seems dumb to talk about getting rid of them because they are a sustainable food source for our family. But it's just really rough. And, you know, there's some other considerations with these chickens. They're super easy to care for, but there's some other crap that goes with it. And it, anyway, so just
vermin.
Keep me in good in vermin in particular. Keep me in your thoughts. As I make that decision. So I got to go to the feed store. I
love you.
So because it's 4:30 in the afternoon and it's already starting to get dark outside, which is just crap. Because of the freaking time change. I hate it.
Yeah. I don't know. I slept in today. It was nice.
Well, I have a dog. So she got me up according to what my phone said was 3:00 this morning and said, "Hi, Mom. Time to get up."
Yep.
I'm like, "Go back to bed, you asshole." Anyway, so. Now I have to go to the food store. I want you guys to have a blessed week. Lily, feel better. Elizabeth, go give them heaven, girl. Okay?
Thanks, babe. Love you. Have a good week.
All right.
Oh,
all
right.
Love you,
Carla.
They're playing
Did you
pumpkins.
Have
they love to eat pumpkins.
No, I give them pumpkins every year, first of all, because they love them. Second of all, because my chickens have never had worms the entire time that I've – 8 years that I've had them. So every year they get a big bunch of pumpkins. Huh?
I said also pumpkins are weeds.
Yeah, we grow them. But people always bring them to me too. So they get about 50 or 60 pumpkins every year, and they eat them, and they've never had worms. So they're a preventative, a natural worm preventative, which is cool, right?
Wonderful.
Okay, you guys have a blessed week. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Love you. Bye-bye.
Love you, Carla. Have a great week.
Bye. I love you. Take care. Bye.
Her emotions are telling her she may not need to get rid of chickens, but logically, we all know she's never getting rid of the chickens. So
no.
Exactly.
We have to figure it out. Because right now what's going on is she's so afraid. We've got a large flock. But she's so afraid of predator birds and our quote-unquote watchdog that now thinks that chickens are the prey also. She won't let them free range. So the feed cost could go way, 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 way down if we could allow them to graze on our quarter of an acre hillside, you know? But that's not an option right now. Like, that's not something she can make happen because she works full time. And she's got a fantastic job that, you know, that helps others and raises, you know, is a step to raising people up to their better selves. And especially because now she's working with alcoholic mamas, right? Like newborns and pregnant women who are alcoholics.
Oh, that's great.
She feels like. Isn't that so much better, you know? I mean, no disrespect to the, you know, to the addicted community. I understand, we understand on the show why you're there and how it happened and all of it. And so no disrespect at all, but, you know, I don't know. Helping out new mamas and pregnant women I don't know. I think that's
what we're
very
good for.
That's beautiful.
Helping everybody. Yeah.
Helpful to the people who are doing it, who are going through the treatment, and also helpful to the souls of the people who are doing it. So, you know,
right.
That's what she's got going on right now. But, you know, this –
Has your mom
tried
– I don't mean to interrupt you, but has she tried a chicken, like they call them chicken wagons or tractors or whatever, and you can, like, move them to different parts so they're still in a thing, but they can be, like, moved around so they can eat and graze?
We've got a couple, one's like a, we call it the model coop. We could put some wheels on it, and that would be perfect for that. So we have technically, like, one. But what we really want to do is relocate the chickens from right next to the house, because that's where, like, we have rats, and it's not really from the chickens necessarily. It's from the fact that our neighbors cut down two giant palm trees that were rat infested, and they needed a new home. So they came close to the chickens, and now they're in our house.
right? And so no, what's it called, a fumigation place is going to come in and say, we're going to fumigate for rats, you know, and it's not going to harm your chickens, right? So that's what we have to do is move the chicken coop away from the backyard down to one of the lower terraces. But, you know, that's, we're talking about mom and her being there by herself. And, you know, with all the stuff we've got going on down here, it's a little hard for us to get up there every week to help her with this stuff. And she can't do it by herself. Like, there's no way she can. So that's what we have to do, is we have to move the coop away from the house, which is, and we already have a perfect area for it. But enclose, this is what I want to do, this is what we want to do, is enclose the chickens, you know, in a run. We've got a big abandoned greenhouse that we're going to convert into a chicken coop. And then we're going to open it up. That's where the nesting boxes will be. That's where the feed will be. But we also want to make little tunnels for the chickens to go down to the other levels and graze without having to worry about the hawks. We've got a lot of hawks. We've got, you know, predators. We've got bobcats, all that stuff. You know, so we have to be able to let them to graze throughout the land, and that they would get everything they need. We've got grubs. We've got earthworms. We've got, you know, we don't really need to be putting out all of this excess money on feed if we could let them graze, but we can't because of all of the outside elements.
Mm-hmm. They still make chicken wire, correct?
They do, for sure.
Yeah, then, you know, if you happen to get enough of that, you just make little runs. Pop, you know, that's doable.
That's the goal. It's so hard to do with one person, though. And like I said, she's there by herself, and she works. We would have to spend a lot of time doing this project, and we want to, but everybody's got stuff going on right now. So she's like, I'm going to have to, you know, get rid of the chickens or blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, stop it. We'll, you know, we'll figure out a way, you know.
Tell her that once I get this RV renovated and figured out, it's really confusing right now because the guy I bought it from, like, rebuilt part of it because it was molded out. And he had a really great idea when he did to just use aluminum and steel plating for that back room so that if it gets rear-ended, you know, like nothing's probably getting broken. But because he did it that way, there's nothing for me to like nail the finishing wall to cover this insulation and the wiring. And so that's why I'm stuck currently in this moment. I think I got it figured out today. I just have to go see if I can actually make it happen. But anyway, once I get that done, I can come help your mom build what she's trying to build, you know? Like, I just have to get this RV finished. But once I get the back walls, like the finishing walls done, then everything else will be really fast, except the two loft beds because I need help to build them.
Right, right. Well, and remember,
but then I can come help your mom, you know?
Well, and you're totally welcome. You know, we've already been talking about it. You're totally welcome to come. And, you know, even at the end of the day, you're not really going to have to rely on this van, this RV until you leave, because there's, you know, it's a 4-bedroom house. She's a 1-person, you know? So it's not necessary, you know, that's all I have. And I'm sure you're going to get it done, but that's what's going on now is that it's not just a, she needs help. It's also room and board. I mean, she's got 3 extra bedrooms. So keep that in mind too when you're mulling it over.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I'm just, I don't know. At some point I have to get it done. So, you know, if I have to leave the loft beds for another time, that's okay. But I have to like cover the insulation at least. And, you know, like those kind of things.
Right, right, that back room.
Because otherwise I'm
going to
have cats, you know, like trying to hang out in the insulation, which would be an awful situation. And eventually that room will be Olivia's bedroom, so she has some privacy in the RV. And so, you know, so at some point I have to get it done. So if I can get the paneling done, then everything else is pretty fast. But I think, like I said, I think I figured it out today, finally, a way to, like, kind of build a little frame so I can nail things to the frame. So it should be pretty quick.
Well, yay.
Yeah, but that would be cool if I could, like, come help your mom with her chickens real quick and hang out with you and meet you, because I've known you for years, but I've never gotten to actually, like, hang out with you. So that would be really a dream.
Oh, exactly. And we're not far. We're only, like, you know, 30, 40 minutes away down south. But so, you know, of course, I'd, you know, I'd be very, very involved. It's just, like, on the everyday, it's just difficult to do. So.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so moving along, I would like, I did download another Jimmy. I know people are probably sick of Jimmy, but this one is even, I would say even better, because it totally ties in with the amnesty thing and how they were able to do it and how these people, you know, were able to get away with this mass deception. Like, that's the big question. Like, how did they do it? How were they able to do it? And I really do think that it has to do with the government and big tech collusion, why they were able to do this stuff, why they were able to censor doctors, you know, why they're still able to censor doctors, and why they're able to garnish support for laws being passed to censor even medical doctors now, why they were able to take away Dr. McCullough's medical license, you know. And so if you guys don't mind, I would like to play, it's shorter than the last one, but this is another Jimmy Dore about the government and big tech collusion. Are you guys good with that?
Yeah, I'm down with whatever. I mean, it's your show, you know, so.
I know, but I would like a consensus. If somebody's just like, no, like, you know, big tech and government collusion was so 2021. I might want to listen to that, but, you know. But if you guys are
down.
Not 2021. This is going on
with a lot of
since 1990.
Exactly.
It's funny, your mom brought up Julian Assange, but in 1990, when we entered the Gulf War, that is the day that our news stations turned into one narrative and never changed.
Right.
It never went back.
All right. So here's what's going on now currently with this topic. And then I'd love to hear your thoughts after. So here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, turns out the government, the DHS, leaked documents outlined DHS plan to police disinformation. So wait, didn't they end this program when they got rid of that crazy TikTok lady they tried to put in charge of the disinformation? I hate to say it, but I'm afraid for our democracy. Behind closed doors and through pressure of private platforms, the United States government has used its power to try to shape online discourse. According to meeting minutes and other records, discussions have ranged from the scale and scope of government intervention in online discourse to the mechanics of streamlining takedown requests for false and intentionally misleading information. So I'm just going to let you know what this means. This is called fascism. This is called fascism. So I know that people like to throw that term around. That's what this is. This is the government and huge, giant corporations that control the flow of information in a democracy, and they're colluding together to suppress your First Amendment rights. That's called fascism. And I know you're going to hear that term a lot, but it's already happening. And by the way, when people say January 6th undermined our democracy, your democracy was stolen from you a long time ago. You are living in a corporatocracy. We had a coup d'etat, as Chris Hedges has said on this show. It happened in slow motion, and we live in a corporate dictatorship. The face of the dictator has been replaced by the nameless, faceless corporate state, and we now live in this totalitarian. They get to They get to drug test you. They get to, because the government is the corporation you're working for, because the corporations now control our government. They control our regulatory agencies. That's why we had all these COVID policies, not because they were run by science or by doctors, but because they were run by the biggest predatory corporations in the world. That's called Big Pharma. Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. They're the biggest predatory corporations in the world, the kind of people who put asbestos in baby powder and get half the country hooked on heroin. That's what happened. So we're already living in it. And so this is just, we now found out how they suppressed any dissent from the corporate government combined narrative. It happened. This January 6th is a distraction for you, the dumb Democrat voter who doesn't realize we live in an oligarchy. That's not my opinion. That was proven by a Princeton study years ago. Your democracy has been stolen from you decades ago. This is just proving it. And they're doing this all at the behest of the military-industrial complex and big pharma and health insurance companies. That's the people, and Wall Street, the people who actually control this country. It's not Joe Biden. Joe Biden is president because Wall Street let him be president, just like Kamala Harris is vice president, because she was their second choice, not because she gets votes.
This joke says.
Yeah, I think these.
Oh, yeah.
So Li Fang did this article along with that Ken Klipperstein guy who passed all that fake info about ivermectin around. He's a corporate tool. They work for a billionaire at The Intercept. So the weird thing is The Intercept does this thing about how we're being suppressed by the fascist government working with big social media. But you know everybody at The Intercept is for that censorship that they're exposing. That's the weird thing. Now, I don't know about this Lee guy, but I certainly know Ken Klipperstein and almost Ryan Graham. Everybody at The Intercept is for censorship.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why this is weird. They're exposing that it's happening if it's a scandal, but that's the thing that they're all for. So go ahead.
Jerks like you in your garage or whatever.
Right.
Let them dribble out little bits of the truth at a reasonable pace without amateurs getting in, causing disharmony.
The Intercept still can't tell you. By the way, The Intercept still can't tell you the truth about Syria or Russiagate, or they won't do it. So but I can easily outdo The Intercept's reporting, and I have on Russiagate and Syria and all the things like that, the gas attacks, all that. I've outdone them. It's not hard. I don't work for a billionaire, but congratulations to Lee and the propaganda spreader, Ken Klipperstein, who lied about COVID, wants you to be mandated for vaccines and lied about ivermectin and early treatments. So Li Fang says docs show Facebook and Twitter closely collaborating with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, to police disinformation. Plans to expand censorship on topics like withdrawal from Afghanistan, the origins of COVID, info that undermines trust in banks and financial institutions. Are you kidding me? What, Kurt?
Okay, so withdrawal from Afghanistan, they're keeping an eye on that?
Yeah, they want to control the narrative, certainly, and they did. So how disinformation is defined by the government has not been clearly articulated. And the inherently subjective nature of what constitutes disinformation provides a broad opening for the Department of Homeland Security officials to make politically motivated determinations about what constitutes dangerous speech. So apparently, so this is what they're doing. So this is the stuff that they're policing now, the origins of COVID, our withdrawal from Afghanistan, anything that undermines the establishment. But, hey, I thought – so Islamic terrorism is not a thing anymore, Kurt.
That's good news.
Remember how serious that was? Did the Islamic terrorists just give up or something? You know, the ones that we're working with in Syria? Did they just – oh, cool. Okay, well.
I can't wait for a reboot of 24 where Jack Bauer fights COVID disinformation. He's got 24 hours to censor this tweet.
That's funny. That's we should do that as a sketch. Funny. How disinformation is defined by, so they don't even know how to define, they can't define what disinformation is or when they say it. So we have no info on what disinfo is. better pour more money into this like it's Ukraine. So here's
a known unknown.
It's a, it is. So here's more from Lee. I think you pronounce his last name Fong, even though it's pronounced spelled Fang. FBI agent Laura Demlow was in communications with Facebook that led to the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop story in 2020 over the false allegation that it was disinformation. This year, she met with Twitter Department of Homeland Security to stress we need a media infrastructure that is held accountable. Wow, it's good that the media is going to be held accountable for suppressing that story. I'm kidding. She was threatening to protect the powerful, not the people who suppressed that story. So here it is, by the way. Here it is. Pursuant to the third-party subpoena, Meta, that's Facebook, has identified the FBI's FITF as supervised by Laura Demlow, and Elvis Chan as involved in the communications between the FBI and Meta that led to Facebook's suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop story. And here's the CISA cybersecurity advisory. We need a media structure that is held accountable. We need early educate the populace, and that today. Critical thinking seems to be a problem.
Wait. Is that the same as, like, the article that said don't critically think?
It sounds like it to me.
Or like there's not enough critical thinking.
And it sounds like they're upset that people are thinking critically.
Oh, my God.
But maybe it's the other thing that you say. And you remember when Joe Rogan actually, again, got – no fucking journalist in the world got this guy to admit this. Joe Rogan got this guy to admit that they were working with the FBI to suppress Hunter Biden's laptop story, that this came directly from them. And now we know for sure. But here's what he said on Joe Biden. Remember this?
How do you guys handle things when they're
Joe Rogan, not Joe Biden.
Big news item that's controversial. Like, there was a lot of attention on Twitter during the election because of the Hunter Biden laptop story, the New York Post.
Yeah, we had that too.
Yeah, so you guys censored that as well?
So we took a different path than Twitter.
We censored it mostly, not all the ways, so I could say something stupid like this and make it sound like we're not totally authoritarian censors, but we are.
And basically, the background here is the FBI.
The FBI told us.
Basically came to us.
They basically came to us and said, fucking censor that, and we did. Okay. So prior to the 2020 election, tech companies, including Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Discord, Wikipedia, Microsoft, LinkedIn. You should go read my Wikipedia page. It's a it's a comedy of CIA talking points. It's unbelievable. LinkedIn and Verizon Media met on a monthly basis with the FBI, CISA, and other government representatives. According to the NBC News, the meetings were part of an initiative still ongoing between the private sector and government to discuss how firms would handle misinformation during the election, meaning how they would censor. That's what that means. And how government would tell the social media companies who to censor, how fast, when, why, and for what reasons. And then they would do it. Why? Because they don't want to be regulated by the government that they control fucking anyway.
If only we hadn't driven that TikTok singy lady off of, we could have at least laughed while she explained it through song to us.
I wish. So here's Facebook and Twitter created special portals for the government to rapidly request takedowns of content. The portals, along with NGO partners, means non-governmental organization partners, meaning these they look like charities,
yeah.
Like the white helmets,
yeah.
But they're not. They're actually establishment bullshit, military-industrial complex funded motherfuckers who are pro-war and lying to you. So they have these people they think they're charities, and then they funnel the information to them, and then they're used to censor a wide range of content. You know, these people who say they're fact-checkers on Facebook, they're all funded by the establishment, but they say they're not government. Oh, we're nonpartisan, non-government, but we just say who to censor on Facebook. And they're all liars because they're working for the people that we're actually exposing. So including obvious parody accounts and content disagreeing with government pandemic policy. So the government could go right to this special portal, tell Facebook, take this motherfucker down right away. And they did that to us a couple times. Here, Li Feng, or Fong, this is great. He says the emails and documents show close collaboration by the Department of Homeland Security and the private sector. Twitter's Vijay Jet, remember her?
Yeah.
She was on with Joe Rogan, and I caught her lying a couple times.
Yeah.
And so Elon Musk fired her immediately. And they met monthly with the Department of Homeland Security to discuss censorship plans. I don't remember her disclosing that when she went on Joe Rogan. You don't remember her?
Oh, I remember. She said harm reduction.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. to discuss censorship plans. They met on a frickin' monthly basis. Microsoft executive texted the Department of Homeland Security, quote, platforms have got to get comfortable with government.
Wow.
Government's going to come in and tell the social media who to censor and who to... Get comfy. That's a big constitutional violation. This should be a scandal, except all the media is owned by the people who want to do this. And it's even the magazine that's approved, the news outlet, all the people there approve of this. Mm-hmm. All the people at The Intercept approve of fucking censorship. That's why it's wild that this is being reported
Can I quote a great man?
Yeah.
What's his name? Velshi from CNN?
Yes.
He says, a point I think that gets lost here in this discussion is it's not the government, it's a corporation doing it, so it's okay.
So it's okay.
He just said that.
Yeah.
And by the way, it is the government with the goddamn corporation.
That's right, which is called fascism.
Yeah.
How does the Department of Homeland Security justify its evolving mission from countering foreign terror groups to policing domestic disinformation on social media? That's what they were supposed to do, keep us safe from terrorism, and now they're fucking perusing. Now they're the policemen on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram and YouTube. Yes. So when I'm talking about when we get attacked on YouTube, that you don't think the CIA, the FBI, the intelligence community is 100% embedded in YouTube, just like they're embedded in every newsroom in this country? Of course they are.
I can't believe that the Islamic radical terrorism just totally stopped.
Just totally went away.
That's amazing.
So they needed you to be afraid of fundamental Islamic terrorism so they could fund the military-industrial complex war against them.
Yeah.
Now they have Ukraine. They don't care about them anymore.
I've heard of that.
They're actually fighting with us in Syria.
Yeah,
so that's why we love them now, and we're funding them. So earlier this year, the Department of Homeland Security launched a widely panned disinformation governance board, which it later shuttered following criticism. But the same agenda still lives on with the Department of Homeland Security subagency called CISA, which argues disinformation as a threat to American critical infrastructure.
What?
Department of Homeland Security Quad Review, which plans agency policy leaked to us, shows growing focus on MDM, which stands for misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, to protect homeland against the spread of toxic narratives. That sounds like dictators. That's what dictators always say, that we're saving you from toxic narratives from our enemies, and that's why we censor.
Toxic narratives like the guy with the hammer in the bus is a big Jimmy Dore guy?
Yeah, that kind of toxic narratives. How the agency defines false info and what narratives are prioritized isn't clear.
Nor should it be.
Pre-decisional, deliberative, unclassified while mitigating the harmful impacts of MDM on Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security must be proactive and timely in transmitting factual information about our operations, especially in a disaster. So this is all bullshit.
We need to be timely in transmitting factual information about our operations. I mean, we may have to take 66 years in many cases to come out and be factual about our actual operation.
So what they're saying is the government is going to protect you from liars. The government, politicians are going to protect you from liars. Chris Christie's going to protect you from the buffet.
Well, he would. I mean, technically, he would.
Maybe he probably would because he wanted all the
like a secret.
But it still works. You get my point. Our government produces lies and disinformation at industrial scale and always has. It overclassifies vital information to block its own citizens from becoming any the wiser. It pays thousands of press aides to play hide the salami with the facts.
That's a good campaign ad. He plays hide the salami with facts.
The Department of Homeland Security official working on disinformation noted during an internal strategy discussion that the agency should use third-party nonprofits as a clearinghouse for information to avoid the appearance of government propaganda. So that's like when you see fact-checked, all those people claim they're fact, all those they're all working for the establishment and the government, so you don't know it. Isn't that amazing? And they call other people conspiracy theories as they're instituting the biggest conspiracies in the world.
I just love these black bars of redacted on every single thing you ever see.
They suggested designating multiple voices as the clearing hour so there is not one trusted voice. This is all it. Okay. So now I love that. I saw a couple of reactions to this. I love money laundering facts and science and truth. This is a great time to be mentally stable. So that's what they're doing. They're money laundering facts, science, and truth. That's what this is about. Oh, down here, the details of this get worse and worse the more you look at them. Yes.
That's when you can't go down.
This is your biggest nightmare you could imagine, yeah, as far as free speech, liberty, thoughts, the amount, information flow, anything, dissent, criticizing. This is the worst thing you could think of. It's actually happening. No one gives a shit because they're all for it, because the media is owned by the people who are doing this, and they say vote Democrat, and they do. Remember this? This was from how they did the election to get rid of Trump and put in Biden. This was in Time magazine. A well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries and ideologies working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information. That's how they won the election. They bragged about it in Time magazine. That's called a conspiracy. That's what that's called. An unbelievably huge, large conspiracy. That's what that is.
Who wrote that, I wonder?
I forget who wrote that, but it was in Time magazine. During the 2020 election, the Department of Homeland Security, in an email to an official at Twitter, forwarded information about a potential threat to critical U.S. infrastructure, citing FBI warnings, in this case about an account that could imperil election system integrity. Really? Well, the Twitter user in question had 56 followers, along with a bio that read, "DM us your weed store locations. Hoes be mad, but this is a parody account." Under a banner image of Blucifer, the 30-foot, 2-foot tall demonic horse sculpture featured at the entrance of the Denver International Airport. So that they were sending, the DHS was saying, hey, take this account down, this obvious bullshit account. This is what your tax dollars are going towards. We are not sure if there was any action that can be taken, but we wanted to flag them for consideration, wrote a state official on the email thread forwarding on other examples of accounts that could be confused with official government entities. The Twitter representative responded, "We will escalate."
What are they, Carlo Gambino? The guy who just nodded, not saying to do it?
Each email in the chain carried a disclaimer that the agency neither has nor seeks the ability to remove or edit that what information is made available on social media platforms. So why would each email contain that? So they know when people like us get a hold of it, they can point to that and say, look, that's exactly what that is, even while they're doing the exact thing that they say they don't have the authority to do.
Well, they know they can count on the repulsive punks that work at those companies to go, oh, let me do whatever you need.
Well, the way they say it, it's an attempt to run around the First Amendment by exerting continual pressure on private sector social media firms. When the government suggests things, it's not too hard to pull off the velvet glove and you get the male fist, said Adam, whatever his name is, a professor of law at Michigan State University. And I would consider such actions, especially when it's bureaucratized, as essentially state action and government collusion with the platforms. As I said earlier, fascism. If a foreign authoritarian government sent these messages, noted Nadine Strossman, the former president of the ACLU, there is no doubt we would call it censorship. So if they were doing this in other countries, we would be calling this censorship. Or if other countries were calling for social media to do this, we would call it censorship. So that's a great – so, this, you know, the worst things you can imagine are happening. You can always keep in mind that the biggest liars and purveyors of misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation is the government, the State Department, the military-industrial complex, corporate media, and then way down the list are people on YouTube and social media. Just keep that in mind. See, in Denver, Palm Springs, Austin, Texas, and Burbank, California after Thanksgiving, plus We're going to be doing a lot of shows in December in Studio City. Go to jimmydorecomedy.com for a link for all the tickets.
And I'll definitely be going to those Studio City interview meetups for sure.
I think you should. So that was really a new one then, huh? Like,
yeah.
Like just hot off the press. I'm going to say
that was the newest one, yeah.
He's not going to be on much longer because he's a threat to really what's going on. He really, really says it very well. Wow. Now, who funds him? How does he stay on the air? Who's he with?
Feel.
Okay. Interesting.
I think he's 100% privately funded. Now, remember, he's a comedian, you know? So it's not like he didn't have followers beforehand, and that's really how he's able to navigate these waters as well as he has been, because he is a legit, I think he had a Comedy Central special at one point, and he's a legit comedian. We just went to, in San Diego, he just filmed a comedy special in July, and we went. And we were like second row. It was so amazing. But he's first and foremost, he's a comedian, and he really, you know, was very much a Democrat, just like a lot of people were. And he read a book. I think it was called Listen Liberal. And he went from there, you know, to the radicalized place he was. He took a little sidestep with COVID, you know, like a lot of people did. I freely admit for about 2 weeks I was freaked out. You know what I mean? But, you know, I woke up and so did he. It took a vaccine injury for him to wake up, but he woke up. And like my husband is a monthly donor. A lot of people are monthly donors. So, you know, that's how he stays alive. And that's how I mean, and that's, you know, I'll always support him. As long as he doesn't go completely neo-lib, I'll continue to support him.
Well, I agree with you. But my question was only because the environment that we have is all neatly orchestrated from behind the scenes. We're only given what they want us to see and what they want us to hear. And they throw out these little scraps for those who are critical thinkers. And here's your little pen you can go to. You can go and listen to Fox News. You can go listen to this guy and that guy. And that placates us to stay kind of where they want us to be. Because our real, real true news outlet was shut down in 1990 when they orchestrated the Iraq War, when they I'm like, wait, they didn't do the towers yet. But they lied to us with a story. And they had their game plan, the Pentagon Papers. They had their vision of what they wanted to do. And if they just fed us enough bullshit, they'd be able to do whatever they want. We wouldn't create a whole war movement, an anti-war movement. They had their idea of how to control us, and it worked really well. And then they took and subverted any type of real information. We don't get real information. Even now in the day of, you know, they had to fight with this internet because they had all these, like, I got these guys that send me these videos of what's really going on in Iran, and it's horrifying. But you never see it's not even on a scroll. They didn't even talk about it. And there's nothing going on in Iran or any other country. Brazil right now, my God, it's unbelievable what's going on there. But we're not allowed to see it. So they're freaking out on wanting to control any type of free speech, but the accurate reality of what we're living in. They want to do the puppet master behind the scenes on everything, and they have been doing that for many, many decades since the 90s, 1990, boom, 90, 30 years we've been living in an illusionary bubble of really what's going on. And every time anybody starts waking up, you know, then that's my question is, we still have just a few people that, you know, will lash out, not lash out, but give us, you know, boom, like Tucker, he'll be talking about this, but then it's like, he stops short and he won't talk about this. It's almost like they are just defeating us what we need to keep us complacent and manageable.
Or are they feeding us the information we need to wake up as a community, as humanity?
My thoughts now are is that we are like free range chickens in a free range prison, and as long as they can keep us kind of contained and manageable, everything's okay. And they'll give us like our little saviors here and there, our hope for humanity. And we never, like when January 6th happened, it was a Trump rally at the Capitol, and they blew it up into this huge thing. The next weekend, on all the stations, because it was kind of like, where all those people went home. They're pissed off. They knew it happened. And then the news started, you know, they could barely even speak it. There was a quiver in their voice talking about the election deniers, the big lie. And now it's a religion, the big lie. But that next weekend, you know what they played nonstop on the History Channel? Was the Hatfields and McCoys, Tombstone, all these get people whipped up to fight for justice movies. They wanted these guys to come back. I was like, wow, but nobody fell for it. And then you saw how that kind of like morphed into what it is now. And everybody, it's you cheated on your wife, and she hasn't talked to you in 2 years, but she's got something. She still hasn't forgiven you. That's the American public. And they're still really worried that, wow, where are all these people? Because they know what we did, and they're waiting for us to rise up as we should, and we don't. We're very polite. We're very discreet. And it's almost like we'll let them do anything. And in the meantime, we're given our outlets to, they know. Tucker knows. And Laura Ingraham and then Jimmy Dore. And it's like, yes, they know. But behind the scenes, in reality, they've got all these. They have no intention of ever treating us correctly, and they're going to fuck us every chance they get, as long as we are not up in arms and out in the streets. And in the meantime, they will create their own. You know, there'll be a massive fucking violent rioting over transgender whatever cats. It will overtake the streets instead of the justified the 2020 midterms, which stolen, which they might be, very well might be, just like they did with Brazil. But they're out in the streets in droves. It's unbelievable. But not a drop of that is being talked about. There was a press release from the Honorable Joe Biden talking about absolutely free and above board elections in Brazil. Congratulations. They were stolen. They did the same percentage they're doing on the news now, 49.1% to 50%. They're doing that with all these midterms races. I don't know. I'll pop it on every once in a while. I'm just like, I can't watch this crap. But they're conditioning you for a quick, not a quick, but a squeaky. It's going to be a tie. It could almost be a tie. It could go either way. They want to steal it. And they get you where you're, almost yet. And like the little guy with the dollar bill, almost got it. And that's how our elections are run right now. And the fact that we didn't do anything about the last one. They're like, we could do it again. We could do just enough conditioning from enough outlets, and they won't do a damn thing like they did last time. And those who do show a little bit of, you know, chutzpah, we'll round them up and arrest them. They have all their little organizations set out where they watch us, and those who, you know, show a glimmer of, you know, getting together a band of whatever, they get their FBI guys in there, and they fucking arrest them. So they've got it, you know, talk about an oligarch, corporate, fascist, Stasi, Nazi nation. Boom. They got us under surveillance. They know exactly what we're thinking and how to control our thinking by putting out whoever is going to appeal to our sense of justice or injustice. It's amazing. It's fucking amazing. But you haven't gotten any. And I'm wondering about what the news was like prior to that, because if they couldn't have just started that in 1990. They had, I think it went back to when they killed Kennedy, how they put a kibosh on what was, you know, you had it live, the guy in Dallas. I don't know if you saw any of those clips, and he was in the news office of his little station on the phone, chain smoking as he was getting the news in. Looking back on that,
yeah.
I'm wondering, was that a show? Was that a show they put out for us? Because the government fucking killed him. They set it up and killed him, and then they wanted us to have the right reaction and never ask the right questions and to buy into their story.
Mm-hmm.
And how far back is the control mechanisms that they put into play with this news industry that they have?
People could argue back to Pearl Harbor,
where I am.
You know.
Okay, yeah, very well, very well. It's all about
trauma-based mind control and whatever mechanisms that they have to do that, they'll use, you know, such as the media, such as, you know, now social media, you know, government agencies, all of it. They need to be able to control the news. That's why I say, you know, what I'm working towards is taking back resources, starting with food, news, and health. This is why news is in the top three, because we have to be able to, people have to be able to hear the right information to make the right decisions. And right now, virtually all of the information is rigged in some way or another, except for this show, right? You know, like we've got no sponsors. This is just
we have different opinions too. It changes as, you know, my thoughts and opinions change as I'm talking. You know, it's not like a scripted thing. You know, thinking back to, do you remember George Orwell?
Of course.
George Orwell, who wrote 1984, he was a journalist before he, and he only wrote a few books, but he was a journalist. And he commented about what he saw in America as opposed to what was going on in Europe during 1918.
Uh-huh.
And it was completely different than what was actually happening. He was there in Spain and saw what was happening, but the news reports in America were different. And that never became a thing, but that memory of reading that came into my head right now. So that's how far back propaganda and the manipulation of people with knowledge. And going back to, my God, the burning of Alexandrian Library and the Vatican keeping the Bible and not letting peasants couldn't read. It was against the law to read. Only certain people knew how, had that knowledge to be able to have information. It's been going on that long. And even here with the internet, did they want to take, you can almost equate it to like the Tower of Babel, where we have all this information at our fingertips, and if we all had that knowledge, we're dangerous. So they've taken it apart bit by bit and co-opted it to where the only ones that have access to our minds are corporate entities. You and I, our pages have been censored and pulled and you're restricted, but these other things, they're not. So it's kind of like they figured out how to take down that tower without destroying it so that we not kind of climb up to that pinnacle of knowledge. And even that story with this bullshit with the Twitcher and the metaverse and Facebook, you know, they merged as a company, I believe, to try to protect themselves from any repercussion for what they did with elections. They're going to be held accountable as an entity, as a corporation. So he formed another company, a puppet company, the Metaverse. That's where he changed names. And then he came, you know, there's something, some type of fuckery going on there. But it's, you know, it isn't another, here's a shiny ball to look at so we don't look over here. It's unbelievable. It really is. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Is Lily, are you still there, babe? Are you hanging in there? Did we lose her?
She had to go. Her daughter threw up, and I was eating an egg roll. Sorry.
Okay. I was going to shoot a little recipe. I'm not feeling like myself.
Most of the information out there that they want us to focus on are things like, you know, the Kardashians and, you know, the queen and the queen's death and you know,
yep,
royalty stuff, right? However, they screwed up somewhere along the line, and people are waking up to what's going on and seeking alternate news sources. Now, they were very quick to start, you know, infiltrating even the social media, the YouTube information stuff, right? But they're still not quick enough. People are waking up too fast. The spell is being broken, and people are researching things for themselves. And you know, they tried. They really did, and they almost won. But too many people are awake right now, and I think that enough people. Not enough people actually realize that all we need is about 5% of the population, and we're done. We've won. All we need is 5%, and I'm not talking about violence at all. I'm talking about 5% turning their backs on the system completely, and we're there. So, you know, I know that these are the last, you know, like dying breath of this system that's kept us enslaved for so long, but the jig is up. I think that we already won, and we don't need violence. You know, we need people to be self-sufficient, not be violent.
Right. Well, I think definitely you've got the great majority of the population actually hate and loathe and despise and won't have a bit of respect for anything that comes out of the government's mouth or any of the authorities, matter of fact. You're doing a really bad job of what your job is. And their only resort to counter that is they are calling you liars. You're lying. I watched the debates with the Pritzker and Darren Bailey, and that was all Pritzker's, you know, talking homophobic, misogynist, transphobic lies. And it's like, that seems to be their liar, liar, pants. You're ucky poopy butt liar. That's what I'm like. Well, that's pretty amazing. That's your new platform. That we're all liars and mean.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to end well because everyone's going to get sand in their eyes, you know. That's kind of where they're at, and I don't even think, no matter which way it goes, I don't think anybody respects anyone in office, any authority. So I think it's going to be, you know, here you've got what helped them through all this was they threw money at us. They gave us money, and we did what they said. And if they seem to want to continue to do this, they gave a stipend to everybody in Illinois, a couple $100. I got, you know, single people never get as much as the families do. I got $50. But I don't think that even, you know, fazed anybody. At my job, they're sending us, you know, we're getting another paycheck during the holidays, because everybody's, you know, up in arms and going to quit again. They keep throwing money at the situation. And there's only a certain amount of time when money's not going to make any difference, because everything is so outrageously expensive that they're going to have to try to do something else. And God forbid they ever try to, like, respect our wishes is what do you want as citizens, as human beings? What will make you happy? I don't think that's ever going to come to that point. And I think that's where everybody is kind of in that tune in, tune out, I'm doing my own thing. So many people are working from home, learning how to kind of get out of the rat race. And even more so now that it's really dangerous out there. I don't know how it is by you, but it's dangerous here. There are guns and SWAT teams everywhere in the suburbs. And I'm like, wow, what is going on? Whether it's some covert little infighting in between these little gangs of drug, you know, I have no idea what's going on. But there are guns and violence everywhere in the suburbs. And then, you know, in Chicago, that it's just like, wow, I don't know. Our little society is crumbling. That's another.
Sounds
and
like
the
you,
next
like
thing
you guys don't have enough guns, honestly.
Well, you know what? I think the responsible gun owners are home, and they're just these wild cards out there. I honestly think it's teenagers, 20-year-olds. I don't know, to tell you the truth. Maybe they need. Are they
some little assholes that keep throwing pool furniture in the pool? But that's
could
about
be.
It.
We'll see. If only, yeah. Yeah, well, see, we don't have swimming pools. That's the problem.
Well, maybe that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Not enough
maybe
fun things to do here.
Maybe if all of them had access to swimming pools, they would not be shooting people. And it's been studied. It's just a theory I'm throwing out there.
If we had a workable living situation, would we be more well-behaved, I wonder? I'd like to have that be an experiment. That would be nice. It seems to be always we throw money at a problem, but we don't spend our money the right way. Like we feed all these people through the school system, but we give them horrible food. They don't like it. They'd rather have all the other yucky food, like the Cheetos and the Doritos. But the food that they do give them, it's not nourishing. It's not. I don't know. I'm like, ooh, yuck. I don't know. I don't want it. It's. I don't know. But they try to give them, you know, what they call the head start, with the breakfast and the lunch. And even many of these kids will get dinner set home with them in backpacks. But it's kind of garbage food. So I don't know. I think if we – something less than a prison system, army barracks type of existence, because that seems to be what the government's solution is – less than
well, that's the pipeline,
nurturing.
Right? That's what they're getting them prepared for.
Like,
this is all part of the
you know,
system. It's not.
Yeah,
you,
I wonder.
You know, just look deep in your heart. You know what? It's there. They're getting them ready for this same disgusting inmate food, whether their path is jail or the military.
And the you know, and the backpacks were a big giveaway back in the day. They didn't need. Nobody needs a backpack. It was like they were training them to be little soldiers someplace. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Indeed.
I felt like I needed a backpack because, like, we had so many books we had to take home.
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I always had, like, the biggest, thickest, coolest leather-bound book with me because I felt like it made me feel smart. I just loved carrying a book with me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I could
that was
that.
My thing. And the backpacks kind of like, yeah, they were, you couldn't see your books. You got to see your books.
that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I know that you, excuse me, we went to school in very different places. We didn't have school buses where I was.
We didn't either. We walked to school.
No?
We walked to school. No, we walked to school. Yeah, we things were not like you had little communities, like our little town. We had a gas station. We had a very small little strip mall. It had four stores in it. It had Stop and Go, a pizza place, and maybe a barber. And then the police station and the library and the school. and that was our little town. Then there, down the road, there was another little town like that. They weren't built like what we have now, which is this huge conglomerations of, like, you could function without a car, unless you lived out in the country.
Yeah, not here, really.
And I think the kids, maybe the kids that lived in the country, they might have taken buses, but the majority of us that lived in town, we walked to school. And then now you've got kids that will bus and will drive them past four schools in order to go to a school, which is kind of crazy, the way everything is designed. But yeah, definitely. When we're talking about 30 years difference, how things change.
Right. And then when I went to school, we didn't have school buses. We could walk to school. We could. Not to junior high and not to high school. So, like, that was, you know, because there were, like, 1,000 people in my graduating class in the year 2000, right?
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. But we didn't have school buses. We had the city bus or your parents dropped you off. And my children are the same way. They're it's weird. Like, there are school buses, but you have to pay for them, and nobody uses them. And you see these school bus drivers,
yeah.
you know, in these full-size school buses
yep.
driving through our neighborhoods with literally zero students. It's almost like it's a
show. And when they get to school, they're fighting an ocean of cars. So it's almost like, why are we there? If you're going to drive it's a crazy dichotomy of what we have going on. I think there's too much money. If the government would stop giving people money, we'd pull back and we'd have those little communities again. And we kind of live within our means and in much more sensible small pods where you would actually have more control over behavior. You'd have accountability because everybody would know each other and you'd be kind of embarrassed to pull some stunt because you're around your actual peers. When you've got these huge schools full of thousands of kids, it was like being lost in an ocean, like being stuck in a mall or something, and nobody knows anybody, and people don't act civilly when they're in those environments. And I think we've done that with society. We've alienated everybody. We need to kind of pull back and be smaller, close-knit communities where people care about each other, you feel more comfortable, and you live within your means. I think. But I do see that government money is living off the government money and doing crazy things. I think my dream is that all of a sudden the government is broke again and we go back to how we used to operate, which is a little more sensible. But yeah.
Right. And I do think that money is like a huge problem at this point in schools. Like, the more money they have, they don't seem to spend it on students. They seem to spend it on enforcement, and you know, and that's really long term.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what these unconstitutional systems were meant to become, you know. And I'm
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad that I've got mine out of that. Like, my children don't go to that kind of system. And they're so much better off for it. And so I'm really hoping that the next few generations, you know, that the positive, the, you know, the most optimistic part of these COVID lockdowns, the best thing that they did for us is that we learned we have to fight for our children. And we learned that we have to alter our lives in order to make our children our priorities and make sure they don't you know, fall victim to these unconstitutional systems that get these gross influxes of money now because of COVID, and they're used to oppress our students even more. Make sure that they have to wear, you know, masks. Make sure that, you know, that if they're not, you know, vaccinated, they can't play on sports teams, and they can't participate in school dances, and they can't, you know what I mean? Like, all of these very punitive things that they want to do to society anyway, they're just going to openly do it and be applauded for in high schools and in schools in general.
Every time I go by, and I haven't seen it lately, I go, you know, but all through COVID, I would go by this elementary school when it was open, where there was this preschool center kind of towards the edge of this school. And every single one of these children were running around on the playground, preschoolers in masks. And it
yes.
just broke my heart that that was what they were enforcing at
yep.
such a young age. Like, what's to come next
yep.
for these people? It's just disgusting.
It is. And that broke the same thing by me. They had daycares in the high schools. And we were all without masks. And there's the little ones. And I'd smile and wave at them. And then after a little while, a few of them were maskless. And I was like, thank God. But that element is still there. And that, I think, is the long-term ramifications of this, is that not only do you have to, I don't know, this amnesty thing. It's like, okay, let's all be nice, but let's admit that this has all been wrong. And to continue with this is wrong, because the long-term effects of my friend just had a baby. She showed me a picture of her grandkid, and there she is in the hospital, and she's wearing an N95 mask holding her grandkid. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's the first thing this child's seeing is masks. You know how horrible that is, that you've just cut off human connection with a baby that's just been born. Oh, but I get all the, you know, but it's like, no. You don't cut off human connection and human reality to try to keep someone from catching a germ. But that's what's become the norm. And it's like, okay, so here's the very first day on Earth. You're seeing these creatures with masks, and maybe you can see their eyes. Now let's go, you know, 10 years down the road. What are these people going to be like that haven't had any normal human interaction, because we're trying to keep everybody safe? And that's the conversation we need to start having, is the long-term effects of this. It's insanity. This is not medicine.
Right.
Masks
exactly.
are not medicine.
Exactly.
Good Lord.
All right, let me just break in here. We've got some breaking news.
Oh, what?
Catherine
cool.
Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips of True the Vote on the Fifth Circuit Court reversing a lower court decision ordering them released from custody. So they've been released from custody. So
and who are these people?
These are the True the Vote people who blew the whistle on these are the 2,000 mule sources, basically.
Oh. And they were arrested. They've been, good Lord. Oh, this is just like such a fucking nightmare of North Korea dystopia. No one should be. God, I'm fucking wrong. Well, thank God they're out. But
mm-hmm.
even going on, this country was built on freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of expression, and religion. And we've got just an ocean of people coming here through the border thinking that they're coming to the land of the free, and it's basically a fucking dystopian nightmare of political correctness and government narrative, and oh, my God. I can't stand it. I swear to God.
So this is – hold on. This is their statement right after. Okay, hold on. This is from Catherine. Ms. Engelbrecht says, those who thought that imprisoning Greg and I would weaken our results have gravely miscalculated. It is stronger than ever. The right to free and fair elections without interference is more important than our own discomfort and even this detention. Now reversed by a higher court, we are profoundly grateful for that. We will continue to protect and defend those who do the virtual work, or the vital work of election integrity, and we will make sure that their findings become a matter of public record. Kaboom. I added that.
Glory to God. That's fantastic. But you know what CNN's going to be doing? They're going to be, you know, it's going to be proponents of the great lie. You know, they're still talking that shit on CNN. And that's become like
yeah.
a cult, the cult of the big lie. And, you know, that's your government-run fucking the worst propaganda station on Earth.
Of course. My prediction, though, is that these people will stop talking about this big lie and start talking about election fraud right after this red tsunami happens.
Oh, God. I'm fucking real. And never
everything.
Once talk about, the clusterfuck of what we have going on in the world right now. With the Ukraine. I saw this thing, and I'm wondering if it's true or not, that there's it's Brazil, Asia, and China, BRICS. They're getting together, and they're going to form their own world currency. And it's like, okay, here comes the World War III is all going to be a monetary kind of takedown. And it's like the behind-the-scenes things of what's really going on is quite interesting. And even with the Twitter thing, with him going in and firing everybody because they're not, you know, on board with him. He's got so much power that it's like right now he might be on the side of what's right, but that same kind of way of working, that's exactly how your credit system comes into play. And it's like we really need to, like, keep a big picture kind of way of looking at what they really have in mind for us, as opposed to, you know, why it keeps all stirred up with the, I want to call the juvenile. To me, right now, I'm just so not there with the politics right now, and it's almost like it's almost as bad as it's like it has nothing to do with real life. It really doesn't, but they want us to think it does. I don't know.
That's kind of true, although I do feel like if the Republicans win, I probably won't be raided by the IRS that have semi-assault weapons. I might not. I think if the Democrats stay in power, that's 100% going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I do dress for the FBI every day. I don't know. It's crazy. But, I mean, it's almost like, I don't know, when you really look at it, we've been living in a fucking dystopian nightmare for 30 years. You think, like, you know, Superman's coming in to save us for, you know, 4 years and things are really going to change because, I don't know, they've just got the elements of this trauma-based mind control program. You think they're going to let go of it? Is it really going to change? It's gonna, you know,
mm-hmm.
That's why I'm not there. And my sister's really mad. My sister, I'm very proud of her. She's went through and took the classes, and she's going to be an election judge in her precinct. And
awesome.
I know, and I'm kind of back into this whole thing is evil, and I have nothing to do with it. Kind of where I'm at right now, but yeah, I hope. Oh, she's definitely a Republican, and she's.
Oh, that's great. We should get her on after next week. If there's shenanigans, we should get her on.
Oh God, yeah. I wonder if she'd like to or not. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because she seems to think that they have paper ballots, and I know that my experience with the people here a few voting sessions ago was you have to sue the county in order to be able to get a paper ballot. They pretty much got this wrapped up for that. So it'll be interesting to see. And she's only one county over from me.
They're
able to do
well. Everything changed after COVID, right? Now they want as many ballots flooding the market as possible.
Oh, I'm talking about going in, and I want a paper ballot to vote. They will not let you do that, and that's been my experience. And she says, no, they have to. And I was like, well, but they smiled and said, no, you have to have done that 30 days ago, and otherwise we don't have to give it to you. And I was like, oh, well, aren't you so nice? So I don't know. That's kind of why I'm just like, the whole process is it's evil. It's evil. I want nothing to do with it. They've got it kind of like wrapped up the way they want it. But although I must say that I was very pleased to see that our great savior here in Illinois, Darren Bailey, wonderful guy, just too nice actually. He made it onto Laura Ingraham. And I was like, oh, this is getting good. So we'll kind of see how our governor race turns out. We're kind of hoping that it will go the way that we'd like it to. But they've got, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how well they've got it in the bag. They seem to think they have
it. Okay, I'm sorry. Is your guy running against him? Against Pritzker?
Yes. Yeah. Darren Bailey, he's a farmer, a Christian. He's actually a senator. He's a senator that he sued Pritzker and won against all of these mandates that he had. But it didn't really stop him that much. For every time someone sued our governor, he pulled back 3 inches and continued on. And never really relinquished. He was like one step beyond the injunctions that the court gave him. And then he's resulted in calling everyone liars. His debating skills was just pathetic. And the station, the Chicago station that put out these debates was so askew towards Pritzker. It was almost like having Donna Brazile doing it. It was WGN, and it was just everybody saw through it. And it's just like, I don't know, it's sad. It's sad to watch. But he's come out and he said he's 100% pro-life, and they just had been tearing him to shreds on this. So it'll come down to, you know, whether or not people want to have abortion or not. I think that's what it might hinge upon here in this state. That's how they'll play it off. But people are just, they want to be free. And right now we are under an executive order, a COVID emergency as I speak, for this until the middle of next month. And he's still at it. So it's ridiculous.
February of next year is what Newsom said.
I know, that's like the worst. I can't even believe it. I know, it's like, at what point in time are the villagers going to get their pitchforks and torches out? Never, never. It's like, and they'll continue on as long as we sit back and watch our Netflix. And that's where it's like, you know, I don't know. When are we going to, have you seen the footage of Brazil? They had the military came in and they had to do a recount. The streets are full of people. And the news keeps, I think CNN's doing an expose on the life and times of this new supposed winner. So the propaganda still flows, but the people of Brazil, they will not stand for this. They say the election has been stolen and they're out in the streets. Just like the Arab Spring. But, you know, here in America, we sit back and go about our lives and our disgruntled workers. So I don't know. But it's like, how I can't even believe he's got the fucking nerve to go that far into the future. Does he have anything to do with this election? Or was he already grandfathered in for another 4 years?
No, he's out for this year, but it's a Republican and it's a very blue state. And, you know, they were able to count, you know, tens of millions of votes in, you know, 18 minutes or some shit. So, getting a fair election is probably not going to happen, especially on such a massive level. But we'll see. We'll see.
Oh my God.
Okay, here's the thing. Biden came out to California a week before the election. Why would he do that? Isn't this state supposed to be, you know, clinched? Isn't that this is Democrat stronghold? Why wasn't he somewhere like, you know, cleaning up a Fetterman mess? or looks like Lee Zeldman is gaining on Hochul, right? Or Kerry Lake. There's so many places that he could have been to strengthen up the Democratic base, but he chose California, the stronghold. That means that it's possible. And the he was stumping for Mike Levin. Mike Levin is who, quote unquote, won my congressional race, the one that I ran in. So
really,
the fact that Biden is out there is stumping for Mike Levin in a supposed Democrat stronghold means that there's trouble in paradise possibly here.
Interesting. I was just going to actually be there for the Slavic ritual they do. I don't know. He was just here in my state this week, Friday and Saturday. I think he spent the night. And there was just a slew of Trump supporters on the street with a fuck Joe Biden and the Trump won. And he's got his whole entourage of Escalades and police cars went through, and I was like, yes. But I haven't heard anything of what he did. Kim Fox was talking about a bunch of crap on the TV. But I don't know. It's just crazy. crazy. I was kind of like, it's almost like, you've got so many people getting killed every day in Chicago, and it's like, it's like, it's not safe for the president to be here. Don't you know that? It's not safe for us to be here. And here he comes. And for them to to think that they could protect him when, there's so many loose cannons out there. And then to get that kind of a warm welcome with all the fuck Joe Biden flags and stuff, it was like, this is fucking great. But I even wondered, was that really him or are they just pretending he's here? I don't know.
Like a stunt. But,
I don't know. And even out of the clear blue, you've got Obama, who's out and about. And I think he got booed down. It got on Twitter and got booed down with the fuck Joe Biden, and he didn't know how to handle it. It was pretty funny. But they still come out. And it's almost like, do you not see, here's the infrastructure that's so important for you. We don't like you. We don't like you. We don't respect you. You probably should go away because – we're becoming belligerent in the crowds, and you would still come out and want to subject yourself to this. Do not see that we don't like you. And still there they are. They're trying to tell us a lie, blah, 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 blah. And it's just crazy to even, it's like, we're not peasants. We don't need rulers, It's kind of like, why are you here, really?
Right.
I don't know. And most of them, they're in there for the power. Well, I can't wait. I really can't. I do know that. Every time I voted, my people don't get in. So that's another thing. I'm like, I'm not going to curse it. I'm just going to sit back and observe. The powers that be want it to happen. It will happen. I think we're really, here, you're looking at how volatile things are right now. That with all of this talk of the red wave coming, and if the red wave doesn't come, there's going to be civil war. I think that it's going to be too much. So I think they're going to have to, relinquish, pull back, recalibrate, give us what we want for a little while. And it's like, they get into power, they do so much, but they don't do a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So we just hit our 60 seconds.
What?
Right. The pendulum does swing. Oh. And I do have to say that, this week will be historic no matter what. And if there is any way that we could ever fix this, it's going to happen we're going to have to be watching it like a hawk. And that seems like what is going on right now. Even regular people like your sister are getting sworn in and to be election workers. And so for better or for worse, we're going to have direct proof of this election. So it's going to be very interesting. So with that, I love you all. Please share this video if you can. Elizabeth, thank you. You rock. I love you all, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good week.
Love you too. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.